Welcome back to The Evolution of a Snake. I'm Zach.
And I am Madeline.
And this is 2019 Part 1. Now, you may have been waiting for this for a long time. What you don't know is that this was performed live in London many months ago, and we wanted to give it a bit of a sufficient distance so that we could come back to it with fresh, excited eyes, fill in some of the details that we had to leave out for the show, and here we are, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Now, Madeline, if you had to describe 2019, this first half, in one word, what would it be?
Ijbol. I-J-B-O-L. I just burst out laughing. That is how
and
I
why are you
it.
Laughing? Why are you laughing?
Where to begin? Why aren't I laughing? I'm laughing at the outfit choices. I'm laughing at the behaviors. I'm laughing mm-hmm. at the Easter
the
egging. Whatever that means. I'm laughing at Brendan Urie. I mean, the list goes on and on. Mm-hmm.
This is probably, I would say, going to be our most negative episode of The Evolution of a Snake. And that is because every legend has a flop era. Every legend has a moment where they flop and flop and flop. And until Lover the album came out and saved the day by not being the worst album ever created, it was going down streaks. It was emergency hours. We, the people, were suffering and struggling. And our intention with this series is to give you an accurate overview of Taylor's entire career each year, minute by minute, day by day. So we're going to be honest with you. We're going to speak some truths that you may not like to hear. If you want to hear us hand-harding, go listen to, 2014 Part 1. We've been doing this for a while. But it's important to note that this is all coming from a place of hand-hard. We love Taylor. I'm sitting here in my Cornelia Street, ugly Stella McCartney merch.
I didn't know that was a Stella McCartney.
Oh, it is.
Oh, but Cornelia of course Street. It is. I actually don't mm-hmm. have any Lover merch. I had one piece, and it was the You Need to Calm Down Lightning Bolt t-shirt.
Oh,
and unfortunately,
horrible choice.
No, it wasn't. It was awesome. The lightning bolt was iridescent. But the problem was, it was a lightning bolt, and it said, you need to calm down, you need to calm down, you need to calm down, over and over again. It's actually kind of a cool shirt. I liked it. But
all
the
right.
problem is
well,
that
okay,
like
then.
After five washes, the lightning bolt was no longer iridescent.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the point?
And you see, this is where the merch decline started. It was when she switched labels and they took over and they went to Vietnam and they said, get all the children in the whole country here and give them little needles and we're going to sew together some garments. And that is the evolution of Taylor Swift's merch. Like Lover is distinctly, I remember getting this shirt and my Miss Americana tee in the mail and being like, what is this?
The me merch specifically. Do you remember the me pullovers? Those in
How
specific,
could I forget?
I've never touched one. I've never seen one in person, but I could tell by looking at the image. I was like, that
disease.
Was made in a basement somewhere in
mm-hmm.
in a basement
with
filled with water
mm-hmm.
somewhere.
Not good. Not good. And that's how all the merch came to be. But before we get there, why don't we start at the top of the year? So we are in January. You may remember from our last episode, 2018, that we left off with Taylor's hashtag Girls Night In, New Year's Eve, featuring noted Messy Boots Selena Gomez and Cassie David. Weird. Do you remember them being friends? This didn't
no,
occur to me when I was
I had
going
to
through
Google,
it.
I had to Google who Cassie David was. And I still don't know.
She's Larry David's daughter, in case anybody doesn't know. This was a time when also Taylor was like surrounding herself with fellow girl bosses. She was really good friends with Jamila Jamil for a brief period of time. And this was the time. And to that, I say cricket.
That's none of my business. That's none of my business. I don't know. I don't know them.
Nothing to do with me. Never heard of her. Actually, most of this year, I'm kind of like, I don't know her. Like it literally is like an alien invaded her body. We start off with a slay and a catastrophe. The slay is, but of course, Taylor's brief but impactful appearance at the 2019 Golden Globes. Joe is in the audience, but they arrive separately. Taylor's appearance was a surprise. She co-presents an award with Idris Elba. You may know him as the illustrious artist of We Can Go Driving on My Scooter.
That's important.
On Taylor's.
That's really important.
Her global number one smash hit, London Boy.
Went number one in my house, I'll tell you that.
Oh, and in many houses across the world. This outfit, this black Versace gown, she's cinched in and she looks gorge. What do you think, Madeline? Did you like it?
I love this look. It's not that the dress is so incredible. It's just that she looks really good. I love the hair. I love the makeup. She looks Gorgina, but the dress isn't itself is not memorable. It's just another corset dress, girls.
most of her dresses, if they are memorable, it's not for a reason that I would like to be remembering them. So when she looks good, I think we just clap and cheer immediately mm-hmm. because it's like, okay, don't take risks. Don't do something weird. Don't do trendy. Just be normal. And she was being normal. She was being very normal this night. And apparently the journalists found that the floor where all the celebrities were sitting was strangely locked down this evening. Apparently they're normally allowed to roam and interview, but Taylor's presence, where she was sequestered in a booth with Joe and Emma Stone at the back of the room, changed all of that this year. Anti-free press, Turkey.
Anti-free press. Now, this was an assault on journalism. It was.
Mm-hmm. We
needed the journalist union.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We needed the Golden Globe moment of her whispering to Selena Gomez and saying something. I wanted to see that.
Thank God those days are over.
It sucks
God
for us.
Those days are
we
over.
Have very we have very little contact, like video footage content of Joe and Taylor interacting. I realized that the other day. It's like very little moving images of them together. We have some pictures and we have that one scene in Miss Americana, but we don't get a lot of like BTST. And I guess that's just because she was literally like in the sewage system, traveling around New York. So locked down.
Yeah. We've never seen them speak to one another. I've never noticed that.
Or have a conversation.
It's none of my business.
That's so weird.
It's none of my business. Especially
so like, weird. Or
considering what's going on now. Bizarre.
Yeah. It is
well,
strange.
That's why I thought it was freaky deaky. I remember how freaky I thought it was when I saw with my own two eyes Travis and Taylor kids for mm-hmm. the first time. I was like, ah.
I shouldn't
and
be
then
seeing
I was
this.
Like, why is that weird to me? And then
it's
I remember.
It's none of my business.
And then I remembered.
Mm-hmm. You remembered that we were gray and blue in fights and tunnels. That's what you remembered.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
For some reason, everyone at this night is spiraling on Twitter about TS7. Something about counting the diamonds in her earrings. I mean, there are 1 million instances of people doing this year. We were so naive back then. There was some chatter about the album being called Mermaids.
This was during a time, I remember every single album cycle, there's some jabroni who comes up with like the latest, you know, if kisses were wishes, skyline theory. And every year, this was when I finally realized, like, I'm not listening to any of this, but let's just say I was. Mermaids doesn't top my list. Mermaids does not top my list.
Well, If Kisses Were Wishes was a really funny one, but I think at the time I was like, yes, because it was like coming off of the back of Speak Now. That's what they thought Red was going to be called. But Mermaids is quite stupid. But you know what? It's not far off from the concept she was cooking up.
That's kind of the scary part.
It's not
the freaky part.
It's not a huge leap. Lover. Mermaids.
Lover.
Like,
mermaids. No, it's girls. In the family. It's at the same Claire's counter where we're getting mm-hmm. Lover. So I do see the vision. They were
it's
right.
At the next register. Someone's ringing up
right.
Mermaids.
Yeah.
The catastrophe of this is that Taylor posts a selfie from the set of the movie Cats, which begins a months-long period of self-humiliation, the likes of which we've never seen since. Perhaps I think this was her final acceptance that acting is not on the cards for her. Do you think so, Madeline? We haven't seen her really earnestly attempt a big role since.
No. No, I think she's still in the back of her mind.
We
no,
shouldn't.
No. She said,
no,
you know what?
Not for you.
I think there's still a chance for me. For mm-mm. all we know, she's going to be starring in the movie that she's directing. I could see her doing that. Starring Taylor Swift, directed by Taylor Swift, written by Taylor Swift. That's what she wants to see.
Produced by.
That's what she wants to see.
She wants the Bible written by Taylor Swift. And you know what? I'm ready to see that.
Oh, I'm
Taylor's
ready to have
version.
That. Yeah, Taylor's version.
We're getting into February now. Taylor attends the BAFTAs with the turkey, wearing a stunning Stella McCartney gown in a nice icy shade of blue. Even better than the dress is the powder blue coat. I love this so much. This is the most iconic picture of the two of them together.
Oh, I love this picture. This is when I was like, I love them being together. They're a fairy tale.
You're
Prince
my
Charming.
Lover.
You're my lover. So this was actually like, this could have been like the perfect primer for what was to come. Did we know that? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But this is actually
like
a really good era style picture. In hindsight, it's like, that is the lover era.
Mm-hmm. It's very whimsical, but also it's not childish, which a lot of her outfits, as we will discuss later, lean into. This is like an elevated version of whimsy. And it was like Barbie Cinderella live movie mm-hmm. adaptation. That's what it was. Because Joe really, at this point especially, he looks like Google handsome man or like Google Prince Charming. And he kind of does look like that at this period of time. So congratulations to him, I suppose. Joe does not want to accompany Taylor to any of her engagements. But he's happy to have her on his arm at his events. That's interesting.
That's none of my business. That's none of my business.
Well, one of them needs the press.
None of my business.
Logged out. And here is where the torture starts. Her next series of Instagram posts are mostly captionless, with the exception of like a heart here and there. Revolting, oversaturated colored photos of her cats, palm trees. And we have her sitting on some stairs in a gorgeous gown. And that's Madeline's. That's
like one of my favorite pictures. No, that's my Moby Dick. Mm. I would give anything to see that dress again, but I'll never see it. I'm talking about her on the spiral staircase in the sort of like shredded glittery,
holographic.
It's like a holographic sort of sequin gown. We'll never see it. Tube top. We'll never
see it
again.
Get up on your good foot.
Get up on your good tube top. Get up on your good foot. Show us the gown. But this is one of many outfits. One of many outfits that we'll never have an HQ of. And you know why. And you know why.
You know why. Everybody knows why.
Yeah.
Then there is the photo that broke the sound barrier, which is Taylor's face through a fence, which kicks off what I think is a new era of rabbit Easter egg hunting. This is the beginning of meth math to me. Like when it stopped being looking for clues and it started being making stuff up. But there were five holes in the fence. I have
there
to
were.
Concede that there were.
That's the thing, that there were five holes in the fence. And I don't see anybody disputing that. Nobody can say that there weren't. So what are we doing about that?
You can't take that away from us. And also, that's the one time where it was fun. That was
fun. Well, in my opinion, when you post a picture that's stupid, what do you expect us to do? what is the point of it? What is the point of it other than for us to like come up with our own fan fiction?
Well,
I'm asking you.
I think she is, as we know, very intentionally doing her hard visual pivot here from like the seriousness of Reputation to something lighter, brighter, more young and fun. To her. That's what this was. So I'd say the real album promo kind of starts kicking in at the end of February. And now this is crazy because album comes out in August. We are starting in February. Okay? We're starting
in
February.
It's absolutely crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
It's too
sometimes
much.
I wonder if it got pushed because like it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense.
The rollout was extremely confusing, and just had so much time to sit and hang in the air like a lead balloon, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Right. So Taylor covers the LUK magazine in a yellow gown. I maintain that I don't like yellow on her. I don't like this. I kind of like the hair and the styling, but like the shoot is good. I just think that this dress is not a good color for her.
I like it. I don't really have a strong opinion about it though. I think it looks good. I like the shoot. I don't
the other
think
L
she looks
cover is better.
Which one are you talking about? Are you talking about the one where she's wearing the pink
one.
Lipstick?
Yeah, I think that's better. I'm saying my truth.
All right. I'm going to let you rock.
But even though she's doing press, she's not really doing press because she's still sticking to her "I refuse to be perceived. I will not give an interview" shtick. But she does offer a poignant personal essay to Elle about the power of music to move you, to remind you, to inspire you. And she mentions songs that have specific memories attached. "Cowboy Take Me Away" by The Chicks, "How to Save a Life" by The Fray. Those to me are like, that gave me real old Taylor, like nostalgia hug vibes. "Cowboy Take Me Away" is like, so that's such a Taylor song.
Yeah. Well, anytime she mentions The Chicks, it's like you have to give it up to the OG. And it's actually really surprising how seldom she has covered a Chicks song. All the times that she's had the ability to, how many times has she actually done it? Once?
And on the Speak Now tour, she did "Cowboy Take Me Away" and "Wide Open Spaces." And there's a horrible quality video of "Wide Open Spaces" on YouTube, one video of it. And it's everything to me.
The horrible quality video. I says, I'll do anything for an HQ. And what do we get? Betty Davis eyes and the Jackson 5 cover.
I want you back. Who asked for that?
I didn't.
Who asked for that? I really didn't, ask.
I did ask for Drops of Jupiter. did ask for that.
We liked that. I don't mind the Betty Davis eyes cover, but I just wish
it's
that
good,
we had gotten something better.
Precisely.
More
interesting
there's
song. A lot to choose from. Oh, there was.
Those covers, really, really good era. I want her to bring that back.
Me
bring
too.
Back the covers. I'm ready for it. So I love how she writes about the precision and skill required for writing a really effective pop song. However, it's really ironic because she was saying this, writing this essay with me burning a hole in her pocket. Is that a really effective pop song to you, Madeline?
No, but I wonder if she thought that it was. I mean, I find it hard to believe, but I was there and I watched Miss Americana. And she was in that studio with Joel and Brendan acting like mm-hmm. they were crafting something that was going to be integral to the pop music sphere that year. And that's none of my business.
Not just in the album, but in life.
In life.
In the grand scheme of things. And you know what? It was, but not in the way that you think it is. Not in the way that you thought it would be.
Not in the way that she thought it was going to be at all.
So here are a few quotes that I pulled from this that I really love. I would like to hear more from Taylor in long form, actually. Like, I do like it when she writes these personal essays. I want to remember the color of the sweater, the temperature of the air, the creak of the floorboards, the time on the clock when your heart was stolen or shattered or healed forever. I love writing songs because I love preserving memories, like putting a picture frame around a feeling you once had. I like to use nostalgia as inspiration when I'm writing songs for the same reason. I like to take photographs. I like to be able to remember the extremely good and the extremely bad times. I love that.
Yes, this was actually, like, of all the times that Taylor has sent in, like, a personal essay or done a form of writing like this, this was probably one of the better ones. And I think that it's because it actually gives an insight into the creative process, which, unfortunately, I feel like, especially in recent years, we have had so little of. Absolutely mm-hmm. so little of understanding, like, what her actual creative process is in recording all of this music that she's been making. I would like more. I would like
this was back when she was explaining herself a little bit more, and we loved to hear that. She expanded on the idea of pop songwriting. She says, the fun challenge of writing a pop song is squeezing those evocative details into the catchiest melodic cadence you can possibly think of. I thrive on the challenge of sprinkling personal mementos and shreds of reality into a genre of music that is universally known for being, well, universal. Now I have to pause and say spelling is fun. Huh? What?
Spelling? Listen, what? Girl, there ain't no I in team. But you know,
personal
there is a
memento.
It's like, oh yes,
shred of reality. Okay,
no, it's in different areas. It's in different areas.
Up.
Yep,
she was
way too gassed up.
She turned comments off, and she needed to put them back on because she needed to see what the people were saying. She also said, you'd think that as pop writers, we're supposed to be writing songs that everyone can sing along to, so you'd assume they would have to be pretty lyrically generic, and yet. The ones that I think cut through the most are actually the most detailed. In modern pop songs, bops and tunes, including extremely personal details like Kiki, Do You Love Me? And Baby, Pull Me Closer in the Backseat of Your Rover, have been breaking through on the most global cultural level. And she goes on, she has the nerve to go on and say, we actually do not want our pop music to be generic. I think a lot of music lovers want some biographical glimpse into the world of our narrator, a hole in the emotional walls people put up around themselves to survive. Shade never made anybody less gay. Huh? We all
you
got
know what's
friends.
Really, what's really interesting about this article coming out at like that time is that now I feel like this is something like the fact that Taylor writes like biographically, writing diaristically, whatever, is like a huge part of the reason that she gets compared to like so many of the other girls. Like talking about Dua Lipa's record, this is a bad example, but this is the one that's coming to my mind. When people are talking about Dua Lipa's record this year, they were talking about like, well, this is a nice change from the very long-winded pop songs of today, and etc., etc. We don't know anything about Dua Lipa, and isn't
like
that so wonderful?
To generic.
It's like a return mm-hmm. to generic. So it's really interesting reading this in today's day and age. And it was also reading it back then because of what was to come. Oh, yes.
And there was a lot. To be fair, there was a lot on Lover of pop songs like Cruel Summer. That is an extraordinarily biographical
period.
And hyper detailed pop song. So she was firing on some cylinders. But again, it just amazes me how she chose to display this new evolution and understanding that she found to the world.
Right before Me was coming out. Literally
right before
Me was coming out. Mm-hmm.
This is actually the promo for Me. This is her launching Me.
Sorry.
It's so silly.
I'm sorry.
It's silly.
I'm sorry.
It's silly.
It's
so
silly.
In March, she covers the US version of Elle, continuing to eschew the interview in favor of 30 lessons she learned before 30. Apparently I wrote in the notes that I think the UK cover has better creative direction and that this one feels
last
minute.
This man can never make up his mind. You see? You see the lies and the deceit that I put up with? I knew that you were like, I don't like that cover. So I was like, who are you talking to?
I was just spitting.
Who are you talking to?
I was
he was telling lies.
Up.
No, he was telling lies.
mm-hmm. Unfortunately for me. So in this interview, she's kind of hitting the usual subjects. Well, it's not an interview. I turned off the comments because it's not healthy to hear from people all the time. She says that being sweet all the time is not helpful. So true. We have a quote, grow a backbone, trust your gut, and know when to strike back. Be like a snake. Only bite if someone steps on you. Now, did Katy Perry step on her?
Yes.
According to her. Yes. According to her.
Well, I yes, don't. And not only in, did she bite, she devoured. Yeah, I'm not in the business right now of being like, let's defend Katy Perry. I'm saying, yup, everything Mm-mm. that happened, she deserved.
Everything happens for a reason.
Yep.
She also talks for the first time about her struggle with body image, which is something she would go on to elaborate on in Miss Americana. And she says that she's learned not to hate every ounce of fat on her body. She talks a lot about the pressure for women to be ageless as well. And we know this was very much on her mind during the creation of this album, what she perceived to be like her last hurrah as a relevant pop star. And it is interesting because another part of this like marketing campaign was about turning 30. Like that was a big part of her message. She's like, I'm older. I'm having realizations.
Yeah. I think turning 30 is like really fucked up to a lot of people. And I would imagine as somebody who is like a prodigious and somewhat of a prodigy, I would think that turning 30 would be like, it's over. now you're not proud of it anymore. So what are we doing? Mm-hmm. I think, and it's like not that she was like freaking out, but I think that it was on her mind. So it makes sense.
Well, it caused a whole reassessment of like her position right. as a public figure. Yeah. And she wasn't quite there yet, but you can definitely see it. I think part of the reason why Lover was skewed so young was a little bit in response to that. It wasn't like she was talking about turning 30, but I don't know that she had like really accepted that she was no longer the ingenue anymore. It was a role she was just so comfortable with.
And then it was gone. Many such cases. Trust me. Many such cases.
Your innocence evaporated before your eyes. Mm. She also discusses her fear of a Manchester bombing scenario happening at one of her shows. And she mentions that she lives with a sort of ambient fear that something catastrophic like that will happen to or around her. And she points out how damaging it is for all of her homes to be public knowledge when she has a very intense legion of stalkers who have broken into her homes numerous times with weapons. And we also find out that she travels with quick clot on her person, army-grade bandage dressing. That I remember that detail really, really kind of shaking me.
Oh, yeah, I know. I remember this, and it's still referenced to this day. People still talk about this detail to this day because it is mm-hmm. like a very, very like chilling insight into what it's like to be at the level that she is. And this was even just back in Lover. And it's like you can only fathom what it must be like now at this point. And the way that she feels about going out into public and knowing that people want to, whether it's good or bad, get at you. In some way, shape, or form.
It has to, like, that is a really ambient fear. And I think also this was indicative of the change in her celebrity. Like, after Reputation, everything just got a lot more. Everything just became, like, a lot more intense. And she really shifted from being, like, pop star to legend. And I think that shift was really important, especially once Folklore came out and, like, vindicated her. But it was starting to happen here as well. Like, she was just the monster on the hill. She was becoming too big. She talks about her love of drinking again, citing Pim's Cup and Aperol Spritzes as her favorite. What happened to my favorite cocktail is Diet Coke, vodka Diet Coke.
Well, I'm saying thank God that's over. I had when I was in
that's not a cocktail.
When I went to London, they had every pub that I went to had like four or five spritzes on the menu, and I was saying thank God somebody's finally getting up on their good foot and putting the spritzes on the menu. Because you just don't see multiple spritzes on menus here, and we need to start that because this is crazy. And I had my first Pim's. And let me tell you, I was like, this is incredible. That was a very, very delicious cocktail.
It's a real summer
and
drink.
It put me up in a way that was shocking. We actually went to dinner after I had one of those Pimp Cups, and I couldn't find the bathroom. And it was really embarrassing.
That's Now imagine Taylor. Imagine Taylor trying to find the bathroom in her gigantic mansion after 10 Pimm's Cups. You know, if I was dating the turkey, I'd also be drinking 10 Pimm's Cups. She also now this next insight is especially rich knowing what we know now. And I don't want to linger too much in the present. But before you jump in head first, maybe, I don't know, get to know someone. All that glitters isn't gold, and first impressions aren't everything. It's impressive when someone can charm people instantly and own the room, but what I know now to be more valuable about a person is not their charming routine upon meeting them. I call it a solid first 15, but the layers of a person you discover in time. Are they honest, self-aware, and slyly funny at the moments you least expect? Do they show up for you when you need them? Do they still love you after they've seen you broken, or after they've walked in on you having a full conversation with your cats as if they're people? These are things a first impression could never convey, girl.
She never learns that lesson. It's hilarious. Time and time again. It's not just now. Like, that's the truth. Mm-mm. It wasn't just Tom. It wasn't just then. And it's not just now. Mm-mm. It's forever. She will never learn that lesson. And I think that's her journey. And I'm proud of her.
She definitely really thought at this point that marriage was like on the cards and the horizon, because she was like talking about it as if she had learned everything she needed to learn about love and she was healed and now she was, you know, with her happily ever after man. And you know what? Well, she also lets us know, though, however, that people do keep asking her. And this was something I remember a lot at the time after Reputation. It was like, well, what's she going to write about now? You're happy now. Like, you have nothing to say. And she said, there's a misconception that artists have to be miserable in order to make good art, that art and suffering go hand in hand. I'm grateful to have learned this isn't true. Finding happiness and inspiration at the same time has been really cool.
Me hee hee hoo hoo hoo.
I found inspiration in Brendan Urie. All right, then. That's
thank you.
That's what happens. The idle mind turns to Panic at the Disco. She also talked about bullying. She said, I learned that disarming someone's petty bullying can be as simple as learning to laugh. Now, when has Taylor ever laughed?
She's not laughing. Again, this is not just funny then. It's funny now. It's funny now. I respect her. I'm saying, I'm clapping and I'm cheering. I'm saying, let's never learn. I'm saying, because it's relatable to me. It's relatable to me. Yep.
You looked at me wrong one day. Hello, the children's theater director that looked at us wrong at Evolution Snake Live performing this very show. We're not forgetting.
Oh, we're not forgetting. Please, please, please. I'll see that lady's face. I can see her face. I could pick her out of a lineup. Mm-hmm. It's been five months.
She's done. She's over. She's done. Literally over. Now, another harbinger of the always posting to come. Keep in mind that Taylor had come out as a Democrat the year before. She says now, and this is where she puts herself in her own. She literally dug her own grave here in terms of a lot of the issues that she's seen about people saying she doesn't do enough. She said, I took a lot of time educating myself on the political system and the branches of government that are signing off on bills that affect our day-to-day life. I saw so many issues that put our most vulnerable citizens at risk and felt like I had to speak up to try and help make a change. Only as someone approaching 30 did I feel informed enough to speak about it to my 114 million followers. Invoking racism and provoking fear through thinly veiled messaging is not what I want from our leaders, and I realize that it actually is my responsibility to use my influence against that disgusting rhetoric. I'm going to do more to help. We have a big race coming up this year. The same sentiment applies right now.
I don't want to listen. That's the thing. This is the thing. And this is not the only time she said something of this ilk during this era. She would repeat the sentiment multiple times. I'm going to start saying more. And then the crickets started chirping. And
meanwhile,
it's really,
she's 3 years into the presidency. Yeah. That's when she decides to come out and forcefully be like, it's a joke. And she sets herself up. When her fans say, well, you said you were gonna be more political. I don't want pop stars to be political, but I turn to Taylor and I say, why did you say all of that? Who forced you to do that?
She done did it. And it's like, you could have said, guess what, guys? I am a Democrat and I support this, these, and those. You don't have to say, I'm going to begin to be the Democratic Barbie. You didn't have to say that. Mm-hmm. Nobody asked you to say that. All I wanted
gonna
to know was...
do more.
Can you inform us that you're not the Aryan goddess? Can you inform us of that? That's all I want.
And once that was done, it's game over. Do your little endorsement post and that's it. And that's all she's done. But she was acting as though there was like great, great activism ahead. It was Taylor Swift March on Washington. That's what she was Easter egging to us.
Demi Lovato said, take it to Capitol Hill. And Taylor said, I will. Thank you.
And then she didn't.
And then she didn't.
So in mid-March, Taylor is Easter egging like never before. In fact, this is where the Easter egg phenomenon really turned into slop. You may remember from prior episodes of this podcast that we treasure the Easter eggs that are truly hidden, the ones that like stay hidden until the music comes out and we discover them later, whether it's wearing the red shoes in the studio before the red live chat or lyrics written on her arm like a mood ring on the Speak Now tour. The point was that it felt deeply secretive and like actually difficult to work out. Now she's definitely leaning into the fact that her fans love to put two and two together. I will give her this, did a lot of clownery to encourage this behavior. We're really good at working ourselves up for no reason. But all this to say, Taylor is posting pictures with a heavy hand of pink and rainbow and butterflies. She posts a picture of her in pink sunglasses and a blue cardigan with a big rainbow light leak saying, due to the butterfly migration in Southern California, maybe I'll just stay inside until I head indoors for the iHeartRadio Awards.
Whatever that means. It's still, once again, whatever that means. And it turned out to mean nothing. That's the fuck of it all. It turned out to mean 0%. Butterflies had nothing to do with anything.
Well, apart from a little intro shot in the music video to me, and then that's it. We thought this was going to be a theme. I think at the time also we were guessing that all these Easter eggs meant something huge, and a lot of the times the Easter egg was for something stupid.
Or it was just like the Easter egg is that the album is going to be themed like this. Or the Easter egg was the album is happy. That was the Easter egg. And it's like, you know,
this could have been an email. Didn't need to be a whole thing. But she is, for this event, the iHeartRadio Awards, wearing a blue sequined romper. Someone wore this to our live show. And did you know that it's $250?
There was a gag of it all. That really sent me when, because did we meet her in the meet and greet?
Mm-hmm. We did.
We did. And she like came up and she was wearing it. And we were like, I know what that is. And we like joked around about it. And then when we were doing the show, we had to talk about what we thought about it. And like,
so we had her stand up.
We were like, everybody look. And then you started saying like, I think that this is the worst thing ever. I like
did
it.
I? Oh, I you said it was like the worst thing ever.
Well, I don't know
I don't
if you said,
love it. I don't
I don't
love
think
it.
It's
I think
great.
It is a Claire's sponsored outfit. Like it is. That's just the vibe that it gives. It's not the worst that she's ever done. But something interesting that I've read about Taylor's styling just in general from industry insiders who do like the celebrity designer house partnerships is that she's very cognizant of doing a high-low mix, and her style is not supposed to be aspirational. It's supposed to be accessible. And I think it's interesting that when you look at like her different outfits, there's always one thing that she's wearing that is in like a relatively normal price range. Like it's not like H2T, right? Multiple thousands of dollars. There's like a ring or a hat or like a scarf that is cheap. So we love a woman of the people.
She was a woman of the people on the red carpet.
Woman.
She was. She was $250 romper. It's like what you would pay for your birthday dress as like a normal person.
Exactly. And she said, that's what I'm going to do today. And she's wearing, you know what I really liked though? The shoes. Cute little butterfly stilettos.
Oh, I love those shoes. Yeah. Again, the butterflies.
Why? What for? What
just
for?
Just for that one shot of the music video. And then additionally,
where
I
else
guess you
did
could
butterflies
argue,
appear?
In the You Need to Calm Down video with the tattoo. That's the only other
place.
But
is it mentioned lyrically at all?
No, I don't think she ever says the word butterfly. I don't think she ever says flutter. I don't think she ever
says
bug.
The image of also a snake transforming into a butterfly doesn't make sense. You could have just used the cocoon because you were in a cocoon for the last 2 years. Like, why couldn't we just go with
now,
the photorealistic...
We should have been at the table when they were brainstorming.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that we could have done something really, really interesting. Oh, we saw the table.
We saw the table. They need rappers like us.
They desperately need rappers like us.
They actually just need someone under the age of 40. That would be fab.
Let's have that conversation.
that would be great. So she has a little pink in her hair for the Teen Vogue party, and she wins an award presented by Maren Morris, and it's for Tour of the Year, Slay, deserved, Reputation Tour, greatest tour of all time. She talks about how every headline about the tour said that it was going to be a failure and a flop tour, which we know is not true. She is very effusively grateful to the fans. And can I just say that the pictures that she posts from this event, like, what is she using to filter these pictures? It's ugly.
It's terrible. No, it's really, really terrible.
Where's the social media manager?
He wasn't there. He clocked off.
Literally logged out. He was like, my shift is done. You got home too late from your stupid award show. Do whatever you want. Do whatever it is that you need. So that is kind of how it goes. But what follows is a series of cursed events. It starts with disaster news. None of us expected that Cats would be good. I personally was in the dark about it because I'd never seen the musical, which led me to being so confused when I saw the movie because it's plotless. Spoiler alert, if you haven't at this point seen it. But slowly, we're hearing details about this movie and the way they're shooting it. Madeline, what was the first gunshot wound of information that we got?
Digital fur technology. Again, whatever that means. It's one of those things that's like, it's supposed to be impressive, like the way they're saying it, like digital fur technology. And it's like, nobody's impressed. Like, you're acting like this is the T-Rex in Jurassic Park. I regret to inform you, it is not.
You're in your CGI app and you're putting fur. And you couldn't do it in time for the movie's release even. So we really shouldn't have been bragging about it. It was applied onto the actors as they, and this is a quote, crawled, pounced, and meowed their way around a set with props that are 3 or 4 times bigger than they would be in order to create a cat perspective for the actors.
Cat perspective.
What if...
That's like, you, I want to know what it's like to live as Chester. Let me just go into the cat set and I can see the world through his eyes.
My house times 10. Let's just make it bigger.
Let's just make it
bigger. For what reason? Did it add to the movie? I actually think it made the movie look weirder. Like, it made the movie look so strange. But you know what? It happened. And then a threat appears on TaylorSwift.com. It's a countdown to something happening on April 26th, which is a 12-day lead time. 12
That was days insane.
Of torture.
I don't remember those 12 days. You know, I can't. I think I've erased them from my memory.
Blocked
out. To shield myself. But I will tell you that that is insane. And I'm thanking God every day that now it's just, look on Twitter in 10 minutes and see the new cover of my new album. Thank God.
Thank God.
Because I can't be doing this anymore.
12 days. And also, again, those lead times only ever work when you have something that people are going to like. And unfortunately for Taylor, she wasn't sitting on the Taj Mahal.
I was leaning on that.
It was terrible.
Did everybody involved think that she was? Was everybody involved saying this is going to be a hit?
It's shocking to me the amount of people that had to clear this and say yes, not just yes, it can happen. Yes, it's the best thing ever created. It's the best way to launch your new partnership with your new label, your first album that you own, blah, 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 blah. This was a huge system failure, system outage. This is like the engine room in the Titanic. The water got in and it was game over.
It was game over.
There was no room.
Get on the door, Jack. That's all there is to it.
There is no space. Do you remember what you thought about what the album would be like at this period of time?
Oh, I was feeling really, really positive about it. I remember, and I had like a blind positivity through most of the promo. Even after I heard Me, I was like, okay, so this is bad, et cetera, et cetera. But I remember at this point, I was like, oh, this is so great. Like, she's doing like a total 180 from Reputation. You know, she's doing a return to form. You know, she's going back to, you know, like Speak Now. That's what it was kind of giving me, like light, you know, like songwriter-ish, but not as like tortured and et cetera, et cetera. So I was feeling good. I was like, this is gonna be great.
Because in those interviews that she was giving, she was talking so much about songwriting and personal details and love and all of that. And we were like, oh, hell yes.
This is her. This is our girl.
She's back. I remember think everybody was saying that it would be a mix of 1989 and Speak Now specifically. That's what I remember everybody was saying.
Oh, mama.
And girls.
Wouldn't it be nice if that existed? Wouldn't it be special? Nice?
It would, and it wasn't.
But it never did.
But on this website, the background image is a dreamy sunset sky, and then she just starts posting nonsense on her Instagram story with the caption 426. There's a close-up blurry shot of a heart diamond, her fingers wearing rings, a big puffy tulle skirt, her cat's on a couch, and so on and so forth. It was menacing. I personally was afraid just by the quality of the images.
she was posting like, this is like your, like at this time, like 35-year-old, you know, sister who's
my
not really
Finsta
into the Instagram.
Like,
oh yeah, it looks like somebody who
it's a Madeline Instagram story, like half photos of the floor, photo
after
of a drink at the bar,
a couple of pims, and you're in the mirror in the bar. This was not the behavior of somebody trying to launch an album.
No, not how we do TS7. It's not right.
It's just not how we do it.
But at this point, we are very confirmed and convinced that there is a musical announcement coming, but it's throwing us off because this was very out of character. She never releases in the spring. Until then, it was always lead single at the end of the summer and an album in the fall. So not anymore. This was going to become the shortest gap between albums for now. And that threw me off. I will say it threw me off. I'm used to my fall Taylor album release. That's how I like it. I prefer it that way.
Yes, I do prefer it that way as well, to tell you the total truth.
So spring is just a little, it's too curveball for me. So then the Time 100 list comes out and Taylor is the honored cover star as she should be. Now, this is some really good food. This is what we were asking for. This shoot was not something they created using $2 filter packs from China. No, this was not Face App. They cooked this up in the Slay the House Down Boots lab, and her feature is written by none other than Shawn Mendes. I didn't know he could read.
I didn't know he could read.
Let alone write. So a round of applause for Shawn Mendes.
Congratulations, Shawn Mendes.
Thank you on being literate. So we're getting rumblings about this new single, and a portion of it is allegedly played for program directors in radio, and the radio stations are changing their display icons on Twitter to sunset clouds. They were pulling out all the stops so for me. This crazy. Is the most overhyped Taylor single yeah. ever. With We Are Never, it was like announced, released. Same with Shake It Off, announced, released. I'm going to tell you about the song and now I'm going to play it for you. With this, it was like, I'm not going to tell you what it's called. I'm not going to even tell you that I'm doing an album, but you're going to know something is coming for weeks. Mistake.
I always wonder how much of it was just like her being like, now I'm out from Big Machine. I can do whatever I want. And she yeah. did do whatever she wanted. And somebody should have been there to say, hold on, hold on. Let's rein it in a little bit.
Girls. So confusing. So Taylor is the honored guest at the Time 100 Red Carpet Gala. She arrives in a yellow and pink J. Mandel gown. I don't like her in pink, but I like this. She has a spray tan. It's flowy. She looks like a bronzed goddess. It's romantic, which I think this is like the elevated lover ideal. Don't you, Madeline? It's like not childish. Absolutely.
Well, this, the Time 100 cover, elevated lover. And then this gown as well. Everything about the Time thing. Because there were real people involved.
Stylists you see what happens involved.
When you bring in real human beings to create your vision. And it's like the vision for Lover wasn't a bad one. I like the idea of it. I mean, look at this. You don't get to wearing this hat if you're not a fan of the Lover aesthetic. But she just, like everybody has said a million times, she just clarified it. And when the adults came in and took the Claires out and put the chic in, we get things like this dress, which I think is like, as you said, the perfect elevated lover look.
It's so true. Her visual sensibilities just as an artist in general are low. And I think even like with Reputation, you can see the benefit of having like an infrastructure and a team of people that are like giving their opinions behind it versus what happened with Lover, which is where I think she rightfully was like, I want to take full control over every single thing that I do. But I think part of being a smart business person and an artist is like understanding like, okay, I need to delegate this part to someone else that can do it better than I can. So I can focus on not writing me.
Exactly. Delegation, delegation, delegation. That's delegation.
And she didn't do it. She didn't do it. But she performs a gorgeous, iconic acoustic set here. I remember watching this on Instagram Live and gagging. She opens the set with Style Acoustic on the guitar. And this is the only time she's performed Style Acoustic. And it is a masterpiece.
It's a masterpiece, especially in the gown.
And it's such a Style is such a like brooding and like haunting song that like it I think it's really brightened up by its production, but when you pare it down, it's actually like a very like almost sinister song, and the acoustic version of it is so good. But her set list is interesting. She does Delicate, Love Story, New Year's Day, and Shake It Off. She was really going, I'm in love, I love 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 love, except for when I never went out of style, love love love.
Except for when I never went out of style. No, exactly. She was Lover. Well, it's Lover.
Well, it's literally Lover. And I remember that people also really freaked out about her attendance at this event. Like other celebrities were like clamoring to get their selfies with her. And I was like, huh, this is what I mean when it started to be different, like Monster on the Hill. Like when she goes into the room, she sucks up all the air.
Yeah, I definitely remember that as well. I remember her getting all kinds of pictures. I remember it being a huge deal. Everybody's filming. Everyone wants a picture, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I would love a picture.
You're all famous too. Why are you debasing yourselves?
That's whenever, like when she goes to the VMAs, for example, it's like, you guys know that you don't have to like fawn over her, right? Like you guys are.
And there's like a line of people waiting to take a picture with her. But I mean, relatable content. It would be me.
Exactly. It would be me.
It would be me. And these are the final days before the world was forever changed by a disaster. And she knew she needed to drum up some attention. So she thought, let me go back to doing what I did before in the 1989 era. Because she was kind of a little bit copy-pasting the 1989 release and hype formula in areas. And part of that is the patwalk. And she also gets innocent victim Abigail drafted in to assist the flop. Leave many that lady situations. Alone.
She has dragged Abigail times will you into exploit so her? Many situations. I'm telling you, anytime she can bring her in, she's going to do it.
She's literally like the hired gun.
She is.
Abigail is there to do her bidding. And you know what? That's a real friend. That's a real friend.
No, it is.
Abigail gave everything she had to a pop star who ruined her life. And they both cried. So these are some of the outfits she wears: a tie-dye denim jacket with yellow jean shorts and pink glasses. It's giving Easter Bunny.
Again, I liked it. I like a tie-dye moment. I'm always gonna like a tie-dye moment. I love a tie-dye denim moment. You don't see it a lot. I would kill for that jacket. If I had that jacket right now, I'd be my best.
You wouldn't be doing this podcast. You'd be over.
No, I wouldn't.
You'd
be like, I'm done here. No, I have my jacket.
I don't need to do that.
I have my jacket, so I don't need to do the podcast anymore. Exactly.
And then she wears a double-breasted pink blazer with what appears to be someone's grandmother's tablecloth underneath it, and a truly, like, truly hideous purse. She has worn so many ugly bags, but like, this takes the cake. It has a cat on it. Enough.
It's not, you know, I don't really like, you know, the I'm a crazy cat lady thing. It's
no,
like,
it was
whatever.
Cute in 2014, but it's 10 years later and no one's laughing anymore. It's not. Mm-hmm. But she, and you know, we're going to get at least another 10 years out of it because of the childless cat lady comment. So like, that's just going to keep going. Her cats are cute. I'll give it that. But put your cat on a purse. Use your cat as a purse. We've
right.
seen that
what
before.
That?
We like that. We like that. Get Meredith. Mm-hmm. Well, she can't get Meredith to sit still. Meredith would claw her and escape. I know Meredith wants to escape.
Oh, Meredith has been plotting her escape since day one. For all we know, she has escaped.
Mm-hmm. We haven't heard from her in a while, have we?
Yeah.
We may never hear from her again. Then we get 1970s living room curtains on high-waisted shorts and a sweater. Girls, we should have known. The theme was my hideous Stella McCartney collab that you don't know about yet.
And that's another kit and caboodle. The Stella McCartney collab is a whole nother kit and caboodle. But yes, that's what everything reminds us of. Horrible.
Not good. Not good. And then, you know what? April 25th or April 26th. I think it was April 25th because it came out at midnight. All of a sudden, I'm seeing something on Twitter. I'm minding my own business. I'm living my life. I'm having the best day ever. This is right when I first got my dog. I was chilling. And then I'm seeing something that cannot possibly be real. And first of all, I'm confused as to why I'm seeing it. I was like, what does this have to do with me? It's the real-time painting of a random wall in Nashville with the two ugliest butterfly wings known to man. And then my heart dropped because I said, if there's a basic white girl in Nashville who loves to stand in front of two wings painted on a wall and take a picture, we all know who that is.
We knew exactly who it was. I was at work.
And then
I did not need to be doing all this. And I was literally, luckily it was a slow day because I was constantly checking my phone. And I remember being bamboozled that this was really happening. I was like, is this really how we're doing it?
Well, okay. I was like, everyone's stupid. Why is everyone flocking to this random wall? Because the Swifties started showing up. They started arriving en masse.
What's interesting to
like,
me
how
is
did they
that
know to go?
That's what I'm saying. I like
someone
I get,
must have
like,
told them.
Yeah, you know, we joke around like, haha, obviously Taylor would do that. If I just saw somebody painting a mural, I wouldn't be like, this is related to Taylor.
It's in a parking
I don't
lot.
Understand that.
Also, can I just say yeah. it's in a parking lot? It's not like in downtown Nashville. It's in a parking lot. So, and when you look at the pictures of people there, there aren't that many people there. So I think like there are a lot, but not. It's not. If she did it now, you know, the street would be closed down. So the Swifties showed up, they descended and they were waiting around and being annoying. And what threw me off and had me thinking again, so I was like, oh, it is her when I saw the wings. And then I was like, no, it's not her, was when they put the three characters in the middle of the two wings, M-E exclamation point. I was like, that can't be anything.
I don't know what I thought about that. I can't remember what my opinion on that as a title was. I literally can't remember.
Well, what? I didn't know it was a title. At that point, I was like, this is horrible. It is a horrible name for anything. A book, a movie, a TV show, a restaurant. If you're over the age of six, you should be not be putting me in capital letters and adding an exclamation point.
Well, it especially looked bad. That Butterfly Wings artist, like actually the Butterfly Wings, she does a many Butterfly Wings. And
Finding Wings was in New York City, iconic Instagram of Taylor Swift.
Right. But this was a set of wings that really silenced me. Not that they're bad. I mean, obviously amazing, you know, mural, et cetera, et cetera. But like, it was everything in
what they were announcing was bad. I knew in my heart, the second that I saw me, it was going to be a bad song. I knew it. I was like, there's just no way that title will yield anything good because it gave no picture. It gave no context. It gave no anything, even a word like Fortnite. That's interesting. We have something to work with there. Me? No.
It's the exclamation point and the capitalization. Yeah.
It should have been me, dot, dot, dot. Ominous. Me. Then I might have been excited.
Well, then the thing is, like, that's a different song. Me,
and that's what we
dot,
were needing.
Dot, dot. No, it's like
that's
a ready
what we
for
were
it. So it goes.
Who's afraid of the little me?
Yeah.
So that was not good. We have a noted ex-Swiftie, Christian influencer now, Dayton, who makes a video screaming at Taylor when she arrives saying, maybe she snapped.
It's the goofy cartoon character yucking. That's
Sandy Cheeks.
I could watch that video over and over again because of the laughing.
It's like the Cornelia Street jumping video. It's so good.
Maybe she snapped. And Taylor is like clearly humiliated.
But also so pleased with herself. She thinks that she did snap. She was like, I'm ready to snap.
Well, also, like, let's talk about what she was wearing. She was wearing like a tube top with the puffy sleeves off the shoulder.
I don't like to recall this.
And it was pants as well, right? The set was pants.
Mm-hmm. Blue.
I mean, it was beachwear. She was wearing beachwear in Nashville, Tennessee.
To the parking
lot. For
no
reason.
With
for
the wings
no
that said me.
No reason.
Like, you put two and two together and it doesn't make four. You don't understand what she's doing there. She basically just shows up to take pictures and say, I'm going to be on Good Morning America. And I distinctly remember thinking when I saw this event, it's chaotic. Like, the videos of her there, she like doesn't know where to walk or where to go. It all seemed very like sloppy and haphazard. And that is not on brand for a Taylor Swift album cycle. And a fun fact is that all of this was an NFL partnership that she did with Robin Roberts in a hideous rainbow towel dress to celebrate later
I
that
love
night.
The towel rope. That is classic. It's one of the worst outfits from this entire thing.
It's
really
so ugly.
Really atrociously horrible. Memorably bad. Yes.
And she also, at this point, after she's announcing to us that she's actually not announcing, she's threatening that something's coming. She shares the first official album photo shoot pictures, which is one of her in a fringe denim jacket and a crop top with her hands up, looking around. Cute. Mm-hmm. We love that. That's a good photo. And the other is her cradling her face wearing a floral skirt and a blue crochet cropped sweater and a giant flower. I couldn't make this up. AI couldn't make that up.
No, I've told you, when you see the whole picture, it really silences you. Because she's wearing she's wearing a pair of shorts, but I actually wouldn't call them shorts. It's more like what she wears for the Tortured Poets set. You know, it's like somewhere between
like
underwear and shorts, like Spanx. And then a pair of white tights and then chunky block heels. It is the most clownish. Like, literally, I'm not being, I mean, clown.
No, it's clown.
Like,
it's
a clown would wear that. She's going to clown school and learning how to clown. That's what it's
not
giving.
For clowning on you.
Right.
You're
no, I'm talking
literally
about you.
Where's
are...
your
honk,
red
honk.
Nose?
Hong Kong. That's what.
Where, yeah. Why aren't those shoes big and clubbed? Where are they?
Where
she,
are they?
I mean, and then the single cover dropped, and that's really when I knew it was over. Pack up your things and leave. What the fuck is this?
It always cracks me
like
up.
Something for a movie, like a soundtrack thing right. That she didn't care about.
Well, that's why we thought it was for The Secret Life of Pets. That's literally why. But it always cracks me up at
we
how much.
We were deluding ourselves.
Yo, well, yes. I mean, we had to come up with something.
She had to dispel that. She had to come on Tumblr and say, no, guys, this really is the lead single to my album.
Can you imagine your own fans thinking
my honest
that
reaction. Silence.
My honest reaction is that I thought that this was on The Secret Life of Pets. And she was like, oh, no, guys, anywhere. It's like, you're not feeling like maybe this is all spiraling out of control because your fans think this is for Secret Life of Pets? No, you're cool.
And then it was like, maybe
cool
it's for cats. No, girl.
No.
No, girl. And then we found out that it was featuring Brendon Urie. And I cannot describe to you how little I cheered for that. Like, not even a little teeny tiny cheer.
It makes no earthly sense. Like, it didn't make sense then, and it really doesn't make sense now.
I
of
couldn't
all
imagine it.
The people. I'm still trying to figure out what she was going for, and I can't figure it out.
Well, I mean, the only thing that I can think is that she was looking for something like musical and theatrical. That and he does have that like annoying theater kid voice that like forces himself to sing like punk pop sometimes. Like, he has that irritating tone. But the thing is that Taylor, if you like that, that's, I'm happy for you. I'm gonna let you finish. But unfortunately, you can't sing like that.
It was never gonna work. It was doomed from the start. Girl, there ain't no I in team.
Please. And she says she's so excited about it and can't wait to show us the video. And then we saw the video. And we were silent. I'm on camera silent watching the video. Literally, I was trying to clap along and it got to a point where I just went.
I think about that facial expression a lot because it's really, it says so much with saying almost nothing at all. Just the way that
you... And I didn't say anything at all.
No, you didn't
say anything. I literally just stopped.
There's nothing to say.
Mouth open. Watching.
Nothing to say.
And then a beat later, I'm like kind of swaying a little bit, trying to get back into it, but the light is gone.
The light is gone in your eyes. There's nothing there. I remember when I played the song for Mason, and I'll never forget this as long as I live. I listened to the song, and it was like I disassociated, and I was like, I can't even think of what I think about this. So Mason came in, like, do you want to hear the song? And he was like, well, yes. So I put the earphones on him, and he got like maybe 45 seconds in, and he was like, I'm done listening to that. He was like, what's like Kidz Bop? And I was like, Mason Kidz Bop?
Kidz Bop. Everyone was saying that.
That's
bad. I had friends staying with me that time, and I had been so excited for the week leading up to it. And I like sequestered myself away from them while they were like watching TV so that I could react in private and record. And when I came out shamefully hanging my head, holding my laptop, my friend was like, I just watched it. And I was like, I'm not open for feedback at this time. I was like,
this is personal.
Talk about it with you. I couldn't even talk about it. Did we talk about it? I don't remember us talking about it when it first happened.
I don't remember talking to anybody about it because I knew what I knew, which is that it was horrible. And I didn't want to go out there and face the girls who were going to pretend to like it. I couldn't face them.
Mm-mm.
So I just didn't face anybody. I wish I could get my reaction to it though and like really see what I was saying. Did I lie or did I say my truth? Who knows?
You could probably find it on your Twitter somewhere. I would be interested to see that.
I'm very interested to see it too. I should search for it tonight.
It was nothing. And Taylor described this song. And again, the more she explained it, the more I was like, be quiet, Tiffany. Like she should have done an Ariana Grande focus and put that song out, realized that people mm-hmm. weren't really vibing with it and moved on.
Yep.
But instead, she was like, I will bend the world to my will. And it didn't work. Sometimes it doesn't work. She said, this song is about embracing your individuality and really owning it. It was a flop, Ira.
Well, the thing about that comment is like, I don't know what about me says Taylor Swift. I don't know what about that song. I mean, I guess corny and goofy. Sure. That's it.
I know that I'm a handful, baby. I never think before I jump. Like there's nothing
to
hang
on to. It's just completely no. It's void of all personality.
Like, which is what scares me, frightens me, shocks me, and silences me to this day is when I listen to it, there's no other song in her entire discography where I get the feeling that she is not there. I'm like, where is Taylor Swift? When I listen to me, I'm like, who is that? Even songs that I hate still have Taylor in them.
Well, there's something really sort of Blair Witch about it, if you think about it. Like, there's something possessive and, like, demonic about, like, something entered... like something else.
I promise I'm not her. Like literally, it is.
Entered the studio and made that song, and we to this day we don't know who or what it was, but it wasn't.
She doesn't know
our girl.
Either.
It wasn't our girl. I know that. I know it wasn't Taylor.
I know Taylor
that.
Swift, and that's not Taylor Swift. That is not my Taylor Swift. Hashtag not my Taylor Swift. It's not. So the reception to this song, apart from the obvious gasser uppers, like Rob Sheffield, who spends his entire review of me talking about how Taylor's lead singles are often outliers and called her hideous music looks fab.
Even he was weirded the fuck out. Even he had to be like, look, guys, look.
He was like, I can't say anything negative, but I cannot give it a compliment. So we're going to have to go in a different direction. Mm-hmm. But it was panned. This song was unilaterally panned like nothing before it had ever been received for Taylor Swift. Look What You Made Me Do had a polarizing reaction. It was like mixed to negative, but people were like really intrigued and interested to see like what was going to come next on Reputation. People had strong emotions. You know, a collective sigh and then a cringe for me. And most crushingly, everyone just moved on from it like it never happened. Like everyone said, this is garbage and moved on.
And that's the worst thing they could do. The worst thing that they could possibly do is just completely forget that it even happened.
They couldn't even make her into the bad guy, Chun-Li.
Would that
they were
I
like,
could,
this is just embarrassing
way,
for you.
If I could have forgotten about it, I would have. I didn't have a choice.
Me too.
We didn't have another song for another 3 months. We didn't have anything else.
Oh my God. Revisiting it, I'm just, again, over and over at every juncture. I'm like, what were you thinking? Yep. All right. Mm-hmm. So why don't we read a couple of the gorgeous reviews? I'll start. Mm-hmm. The Atlantic. Me has none of the elements that once made Swift interesting, but it does have a dolphin screech for a chorus.
The Ringer. Me is a cleanly goofy Disney pop confection with an earworm chorus and a certain try-hard insidiousness. That's probably
and it's
that.
Right. That's right. That's what we were just describing. The insidiousness.
The insidiousness of it. Ooh, I gotta chill up my spine.
Oh, it's freaky deaky.
It's
Pitchfork.
Freaky.
Me is a showcase of the worst and weakest aspects of Swift's work, and here's where they really clocked her. It's not hard to write a song better than this. Well, Katy Perry might have something to say about that.
Oh, Katy Perry has entered the chat. I mean, kitty, yes, wanna purr, or whatever the song goes.
I'll take me.
I'll take me any day, girl. The lyrics of Me are just surface messaging about self-love and acceptance, the kind of Halloween positivity slapped on greeting cards and slogan t-shirts sold as empowering. It's so mean and it's so right. It's so nasty.
See, that's the other thing about Me that people clocked immediately was that because it was insidious and because it was dead-eyed, it just seemed like a cash grab. Like it just literally seemed like there was something so cynical about Me because it was devoid of like Taylor Swift's unique stamp. Slate said that the way that Swift and Yuri traipse through a kiss and makeup number out of a teen musical is fluffy and immaterial. Immaterial. Damn.
The spinoff. I was prepared to like it until Taylor yelled, spelling is fun. And from that point in the video, I felt a little bit sick.
Well, I can't. The problem is most of the times when people are delivering searing criticisms of Taylor Swift, I'm like, you're wrong. I can do this, that, the other thing.
I have nothing.
This one,
no, I'm going to let them run.
I'm taking the knives.
I know what
they're
happened.
Going into my skin.
I was there too.
I have to agree.
I was there too.
I have to agree.
I don't have a choice. I really don't have a choice.
It was just such an aberration away from like the Taylor Swift that we knew and loved. I mean, we've discussed this, but like the personality was gone. The life was gone. The soul was gone, dead behind the eyes. And then we got the music video. If I were her label and I spent millions of dollars on this, I would have said, time to renegotiate the contract.
I really want to know if there was like a war room moment where they were like, we have to pivot.
No, definitely not. Certainly not.
Well, I mean,
not.
They didn't.
Certainly not.
They
did. Maybe without her in the room.
It would make sense. Like, if you think about the big gap between Me and You Need to Calm Down in the album, like, but if it did happen, nothing changed. So what are we doing?
At the end of the day, it was still successful. I hate to say it, but like, you know, peaking at number two and selling a bunch of copies, like other songs from other artists that are great songs don't do that well. So like from a financial point of view, I can see them kind of being like, eh. But I think that we were also on the verge. Like this was when Taylor really, it wasn't so certain that anything she would do would be really, really successful. This seemed like it might go wrong. Whereas like with something like Tortured Poets, it could never go wrong, even if it was terrible. And Midnights too. Like those things were just always going to be a success. Whereas with Lover, I still feel like we were... while living on a prayer. And it felt that way. It's clearly an expensive music video. The CGI is crazy, crazy ugly, especially with that vomiting dress at the end, but crazy nonetheless. It's based in the city of Lover, where there are Easter eggs abound, including a very subtle, large neon sign that says Lover, which we immediately clocked as the album title, and she denied for a very long time.
She didn't want to be caught that soon. What did she think we were going to make of a giant neon sign? It was literally a giant neon sign.
That's not the thing that
silences me.
It's a billboard. It's a billboard. Yep. Of course, it includes humiliating French dialogue at the beginning.
That's none of my business. I don't remember that part.
Je suis comme.
No, I don't remember that.
I wasn't there. That wasn't me. No. I don't know if that was. There are several useless and pointless Easter eggs. However, the one Easter egg that I clocked and was excited about was the hint of a Chicks collab. So overdue. And that gave me a little teeny tiny glimmer of hope, you know?
Well, I remember being baffled. I remember people saying, oh, this is an Easter egg for the Chicks. And I was like, so what is the reality where a song like this is on the same album as a Chicks collab? That was my response to that. And like to everybody's credit, everybody else was right. But I don't think I was crazy to think
certainly
you guys
not.
Were crazy. Because that, if certainly you think not. About it, that don't make no sense. But I mean, it was the timeline, and we were riding
the ride. And then
when
you put the two songs side by side, it really doesn't make sense. But it happened, nevertheless.
Nevertheless,
she persisted.
We persisted. Nevertheless.
So a lot of people thought that Me was going to be a return to form, us included, especially because of what she'd said about songwriting, et cetera, being happy again. And she kind of indicated this in an interview about Me with Zane Lowe. She described this new album as about me as a person and more about breaking down the walls she built during Reputation. She also says she would stop doing Easter eggs when it wasn't fun for the fans anymore. I'm begging. I'm pleading. I'm crying. I'm screaming. I'm throwing up.
We haven't been having fun for a very long time. We have not been having fun for a very long time. I mean, I know they're out there, and I know that they alone, like these people who are so obsessed with Easter eggs, they control the narrative now. We're trapped in their, it's their dollhouse, man.
I think they control the world. I think they're the deep state.
Well, do you remember when she had us doing like Rubik's Cube puzzle solves on Google.com? That was crazy. Mm-hmm. And what's crazy is how many puzzles, wasn't it 89 million puzzles had to be solved? And they did. Mm-hmm. In record
time,
too.
They did it all.
That's not normal.
It's not. It's not normal. And literally hours after it comes out, Taylor is already on the defense about this song being ironic or a joke. She said, there is nothing ironic about that music video. You don't put $100 million into a joke. I'm sorry, you don't. She says that she's typically always stuck with her friends for duet, accidentally clocking Brendan as not her friend. But she branched out here with Brendan because she wanted his, quote, playful, mischievous performance style of overly dramatizing something for the sake of humor. And she also said that people don't always get the joke, but that's okay. What's the joke? What's funny?
So what? So that's the thing, is that like she's saying, no, it's a joke. Like, what's the joke?
But the joke
like,
is this is the joke, but
this
not in the way that
the
you're
joke.
Saying it is. The song is the joke, but like you think that it's a good song somehow.
This is the
so she
only
went from
time
being like it's serious to it's a joke to it's whatever. She couldn't stand behind her own work. The only time that's ever happened.
That's what I was just about to say. This is the only time where she has done something. And, like, she's been criticized and called goofy and weird and lame and all kinds of other things before.
And has defended
and she's
herself
stood her
against
ground.
Criticisms.
But this one, I was there a moment where she, like, played the song and was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Was it, like, coming out of the stupor or something? And she was like, what have I done? What have I done?
Well, she played it on the Eras tour, but it took her a long time and she did it overseas. So I don't think that she is really like loving this song, to be honest. And also the song fails to cement a number one hit. I think this was because Old Town Road was blocking basically everything. It's like the Shaboozy song. Despite Taylor pulling out all the stops, autographed single copies at the last minute, which never arrived, by the way, a vast array of Vietnamese children produced sweaters with You Can't Spell Awesome Without Me on them. She tried everything and she flopped. So now she's saddled to this debt. She has tied her horse to a dead weight carriage and she's got to keep pulling it along. So we're in May and Taylor's debut performance of Me is at the Billboard Music Awards with Brendan Urie and a drumline. She is immediately clowned upon for Beyonce's homecoming drumline, copying that. They were calling it hashtag Mayocella on Twitter. They were
now
still trying to get
good.
Her ass.
I
they were
read
still
that
trying
earlier
to get
when
her
I read
ass.
The notes. It cracked me up so bad. I was like, Mayocella?
Well, it's a clock, too. It was. That's exactly what it was.
I mean,
no flavor. No substance.
No flavor. No flavor. No substance. They got her. They got her.
They got her. And also, yeah. This was at a time when people were still mad at Taylor. Like, the snake thing was still really lingering in people's heads. So yeah. It wasn't the best time to be flopping in public. It
no,
just wasn't.
She really needed to come out swinging. And she really was. She it was like, you know, in the cartoons when a kid like goes to punch and instead they like trip
boom,
and fall. Yeah, that's
literally
what happened.
That's her. So let me try and find something positive to say about this performance. She looks gorgina. She's wearing a rainbow sequin one shoulder number with blue glittery boots. Okay. I like that. Do you like the look?
Yeah. No, it's a damn shame because a lot of the Me performance looks are actually kind of cute. I actually kind of like
the staging
conductor.
Was cute. All the like, the conductor, the staging with all the different color pastel lampposts, the umbrellas, like, okay, I can see what you're trying to do. Unfortunately, that can't make the song good. Sadly.
No.
Nothing can save you.
You can put on
nothing
all the glitter you want. You can't put lipstick on a pig.
you
just can't do it.
You literally can't. So you can also hear someone in the drum line is mic'd up wrong or weird. So in the performance, you can hear like the sticks clapping together as much as you can hear her singing. And it's like,
I love it. It's so good.
The universe was really, there was a karmic debt being paid here. Like she was, a score was being settled from someone. Brendan Urie flies in on an umbrella. And I wish that a gust of wind had taken him away.
That really silenced me. I remember being like, oh my God.
Also, the videos of him just hanging there waiting to be let down for like minutes. That sent me.
It's like Pink. It's like Pink waiting in the wings, waiting to go flipping.
In his three-piece suit. In his three-piece suit. And I just kept thinking, watching them perform, you cannot be adults selling this song to other adults. And the adults in the audience looked embarrassing. Joe Jonas was there smiling nervously, laughing. Sophie Turner was laughing at her. I'm sorry, she was. And she deserved it. Sadly, I wish that wasn't the case. But it's like, it's one of those things where if you force it, it makes it even worse. It's like if you admit defeat and you admit that you're embarrassed, you lose. But you lose harder when you insist that something that is terrible is good. And when you earnestly commit to it.
I just keep seeing the vision of Brendan Urie like descending onto the stage with his umbrella. And I'm
pretending
just
pretending to walk.
Did they really think that was a good idea?
Yes.
It just baffles me. It baffles me. No comment.
Well, at the end, they both fly away on an umbrella. So that's how it ends. And despite everyone hating this song and it being a flop, she has to drag her ass around Europe performing this song for a few weeks, and she is being notoriously tight-lipped about anything else to do with the record, letting all the hype for it build on the anticipation of this song that everyone hates.
It's a horrible, horrible, absolutely horrible. And I promise that you'll never find another like me. I promise that you'll never find another like me. It's like one of my favorite videos.
The compilation ever. Of that all her performances like, of me.
I feel like she performed that song more than she performed Shake It Off when she was promoting Shake It Off.
She looks
it just
deader,
felt like it was everywhere.
Each time.
Mm-hmm. She tried.
And it wasn't working.
Nope.
She was giving it everything
working.
She got. And towards the end of those performances, you can really see she's not having fun. She cuts out the spelling is fun part. She's removing it on streaming. Like, it's not going well for her. And at this point, she really just should have dropped The Archer. Like, she should have just dropped that and been like, hey, guys, this is a pre-release single. This is not the next single, but it's just another taste of what's to come on the album, or literally anything else. Because this, for months, with no context, and then going into You Need to Calm Down, it was over. It was over.
That's the only way to put it. It was absolutely, completely 100% over.
And it didn't have to be, because there are goddamn good songs on Lover. She could have had four great singles from Lover if she had just not been insane.
And look at the timeline we decided to wind up in. That's none of my business. Another thing that's just none of my business.
Well, you know what? It was a humbling experience.
It was. Well, everybody needs one. That's the truth. Everybody needs to have one.
And I think that it does her good. So this humbled her really, really fast. And the performances to discuss here are, well, first of all, the Germany's Next Top Model one, which is hilarious because she's performing to an empty arena. And Heidi Klum is standing there doing cricket and clapping her hands while Taylor sings the song. And you can tell that it's a bad song because no one knows the words. When you look into the audience when she was promoting Shake It Off, people were going, shake it off, shake it off. Everybody was watching me, mouth open, clapping like Joe Jonas.
And the crazy thing is that the lyrics to me are so much simpler, really. Me, he,
me, he,
he. You guys don't know who.
Lyric. Lyric is a strong word. You can't pick that one up after the first go.
I'm the only one of me. Baby, that's
girls,
the fun of me. Come on.
Girls, the Graham Norton performance sticks out in my mind as a real what am I doing moment for her. Like, you could intuit in her gaze that she was depleted. And I think that's because Graham Norton is like a very adult setting. It's like where, you know, a bunch of celebrities come together and have a conversation. Like, there's something a little more like elevated about it as a show. And I think she was embarrassed.
All she had
to be dragging her player self in there and going, me hee hee.
And I would
horrible.
Be embarrassed too. Like, we couldn't have taken something out of the vault. We couldn't
anything.
Have just like really quick done a quick
do
call
shake
what
it
you
off.
Want moment.
Do
yeah,
shake it
I mean,
off.
Everybody would have cheered. Everybody
would have
cheered.
All cheered.
I would have cheered.
This is also one of her first televised interviews in a long time. And it's like in a conversation with other people. So I think it's less stressful. I think it's a good vibe for her. And she says that her fans have figured out the name of the album because of the smart clues in the video. Is the smart clue in the room with us?
The smart clue.
Love her. Smart clue. Well, if you say so.
Oh, she kills me, man. She kills me.
I itch.
Love her, Taylor. She's a different kind of animal.
She's a sim.
She really is. She's a sim.
She's a sim, and she has a sadistic owner who's like making her do embarrassing things.
That's
what's happening to her. And you know what? It's only funny in hindsight. I wasn't laughing when this was happening. I was not laughing. It was serious.
It's crazy to me.
It was really serious.
The fact, listen, no matter what anybody says, the fact that we stayed, and not only did we stay, I bought all 5 copies of those diaries. I was logged in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can never take that away from me. And what were you doing during Lover?
I ordered the autographed single copy of me. What were you doing? Period. What were you doing?
We were
there in the trenches waiting. Because as we did know that eventually when the album came, it wouldn't be bad. We knew that.
We got scared.
But we knew that eventually it would be good. We were used to some shenanigans, but this was like a level of shenanigan that we just like weren't ready for that.
Well, you know, the thing is, if you think about it, me is kind of like Shake It Off if Shake It Off was made by a foolish person.
It is. It's like a copy paste.
Yes. It's very, very similar, but it just like it
doesn't
like
have any heart.
Like
it has no soul.
Evil twin. You know, it's like Wario. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm. Or the sibling that got like subsumed in the womb.
Oh, it got
by the other sexier, healthier twin.
Yeah, like ate the brain. <That's>
literally what happened to it. So she says in this record that nobody knows anything about this record. So interviewing her is actually a challenge. Graham is like, this song has a lot of bright colors. Is that foreshadowing what the album is? And she's like, well, yes. What is it foreshadowing? What does that foreshadow? Please tell me. She says, I'm in a much better mood. It's a happier album and everyone chuckles. And I don't know what's going on with her in this particular era, but she was coming across very forced. She tried to explain her clever rhyme scheme of there will be no explanation, there will just be reputation, which she does multiple times, by the way, in these interviews. And no one's chuckling. And she tells the boring story of crashing her car with Rolling Stone. And she tells Graham Norton, now this is where really I was like, I have to turn it off. She starts talking about cat school and how amazing it was. And how animal behavior class is where you crawl around as a cat on the floor, learning about cats, watching videos of them, studying their bodies and instincts. And she proudly says, I was only supposed to go in there for 3 days, but I was there for 4 months.
Here's the thing about that is what makes that so crazy is you need to remember who her peers were. Rebel Wilson.
Idris Elba.
Jason Derulo.
Dame Judi Dench. Jennifer
they
Hudson
were
crawling on the
around
floor,
like cats
licking out of
with
bowls.
Taylor Swift. And you know, Taylor was showing up every day, bright eyed and bushy tailed, like, I'm ready to be a cat. I don't think everybody else was as thrilled to be there as Taylor was.
Everyone else did that 3 days. I cannot imagine that she's being truthful about four months. I think it was just in London and she wasn't doing anything because, you know, she was on house arrest. So every so often she'd be like, let me go in and just do a little meow. Get a job is what I would respond to her.
The cats part of the Lover era is really the part that takes it from just bad into like
to a joke.
Like itchball. What are you talking about?
And it was very clearly timed, like the Lover album cycle. I think maybe might have been a little bit earlier because Cats was premiering later in the year. So she didn't want to be like on album cycle then. Big mistake. Huge.
Huge.
Huge. We get some candids of her and Joe in Paris. She's wearing a rainbow sweater and doing her usual I'm with Joe incognito look, hat and glasses. She performs on The Voice in France, and that is mercifully her last televised performance of me until release week. We, thank God, get these gorgeous images of her in her hotel before she does press. Bark.
Well, I was barking. Rough. I was like, finally, there she is. There's the girl. Rough.
this reminded me of that look that we both love in the Me music video, the like kind of 60s one with where she's performing with Brendon Urie.
Yeah, with the heart dress. Oh, I love
it. It kind of gives that. It has the same like high neck. And I don't like her in yellow, but this looks good. She looks gorgeous.
Well, the hair looks really good. It's like a very like, again, it's elevated Lover. Like it's not goofy. It still kind of gives Lover. It's very light. It's very clean. You know, it's like, ooh, I'm in the Spring Meadow, et cetera, et cetera. But it's like, it's chic and she looks really well put together. And I think she looks absolutely Gorgina. I mean, I said, there's my girl. And speaking of the heart shaped dress in the Mew music video, that is like one of my favorite things to see at the Eras tour. When I see a girly
underrepresented.
Underrepresented. When I see somebody who's doing it, I'm like, awooga.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah, it looks really good. I love it.
And that's the only Mew look that I will accept. I'm sick of seeing that black leotard with the white tulle. I don't want to see that anymore. Get that away from
me. Oh, yeah. And that was such a dress, like, of its era, too. Like, that is very 2019.
It's not. We got to pack it up.
We got to pack it up.
We don't need that now. Mm-mm. So then we get Taylor's first, I guess, magazine cover with an interview. And she is the cover star of Entertainment Weekly. And I have to say, Entertainment Weekly. Well, okay. This is shot by Peggy Sirota, and this is a nice shoot. She's wearing the Easter egg button pin denim jacket with pink in her hair. Gorgeous. There's that one photo of her like from a side profile going like this. I love that. She looks great.
When it first came out, I was shitting myself because I felt like this was the most information we had gotten about. I remember sharing it with my sister and being like, look at it.
She's
and like
speaking.
Looking at all the pins. Like, do you see how we're getting some information? And she looked amazing. Absolutely amazing. On the cover specifically.
We cheer.
Absolutely gorgeous.
We cheer. And I know for a fact that she was very nice on this shoot. She was very nice. It was a lockdown set, like the president was there, one like the photographer had never worked with before. And I think the photographer has shot presidents before, if I'm not mistaken. The security was crazy. So that's something to notice about working with Taylor Swift. The shoot is like desert themed, I guess. She's like in the sand.
Well, she's
and
a snake.
Like there's like, it's like Josh. Oh, yeah, I guess that's what it is. I'm so stupid. I didn't put that together. It's like Joshua Tree vibes, kind of. Rattlesnake.
I think it was like an attempt to meld the two. Like, I'm the snake, but I'm the butterfly in the desert. I'm the desert rose.
That I like
kind
that.
Of thing. It is.
I
it's
like
cute
that.
And it's clever. Yeah, it's a lot more clever than what was going on in the Mew music video. I'll tell you that for free.
Oh, yeah.
They
and it's
cooking.
A lot more clever
See,
than what was going on in her denim jacket.
A creative director in the room.
Who understands.
You have some interesting thoughts. You get some interesting thoughts. That's all I'm saying. It's just food for thought.
So the Easter eggs on her denim jacket pins are as such. The word awesome. That's not an Easter egg. We've heard the song. Thank you. Dun Dun from Law and Order. What does that have to do with anything? Nothing. Some Game of Thrones characters. Troy Sivan. Meredith and Christina.
Why was Troy Sivan there?
I don't know.
Do
they
we
weren't
know
even
why?
Like friends like that. He said we're not friends like that. Around that time. So confusing to me. Oh, maybe because he's gay. She was doing gay Easter egging. Actually, that's why.
You're just like using Troy Sivan to be like, I have gay friends. You see?
Literally.
Troy Sivan?
Well, what was the You Need to Calm Down music video? I bet she tried to get him on that video
so
bad.
Where was he?
I
and he was like, you know what?
I'm not a clown. I'm not gay for hire.
I won't do your clown shit anymore, Taylor. Yeah, I don't love that. Now that we're thinking about it,
I think
I don't
about
love
it,
that.
That's what it was. And he's close to a gay pride heart pin as well.
And you know what? This wasn't – everybody's thinking, oh, Troy Sivan now. No, this was Troy Sivan back when he was struggling to have a career. Can I share this with you? And this
when
is
being
what
gay
was
not his calling card.
How she was moving. Come on, guys.
Girls. And what else is there? Selena Gomez. Well, stop every album. We delude ourselves into thinking there's going to be a Selena Gomez collab. And it's never happened.
And it's
we
never coming. It's never coming. We need to get over
Drake.
It.
Drake. Now, a Drake collab also has been much rumored. That's never happening now. But if there ever was going to be a time, it should have been Reputation. And that didn't happen. So my apologies to Taylor Swift. The Chicks and Faith Hill. The only real Easter egg there is The Chicks. And that was an Easter egg that had already been revealed to us. The cast of Friends. Why do I care about that?
It's nice to have a friend, I guess, is what that one is. But again, that's not a good Easter egg. That's not an Easter egg.
You just love Friends.
It's just
you know
like,
that.
I just love Friends. I don't. And you know what? Here's what pisses me off is that there are so many pins in the world. You
go
into any record store in the world and there's buckets of pins for you to choose from. And this is what we came up with. I think she had to have that Troy Sivan pin custom made.
Yep. Congratulations, Taylor.
Troy Sivan.
Are you happy about that?
To parade him about. I've never like computed that he's in there, and I'm disappointed. Mm-hmm. I'm silently disappointed. Not that like Troy Sivan, but that
me too.
It's shocking to
but
me.
The
that,
accusations
that
of culture vulturism and of opportunistic performative activism not helped by any of the conduct during this period of time. But anyway, this is her first sit-down magazine interview in 3 years, and she's giving it to Entertainment Weekly. Why? Because they have no leverage, so they won't ask her any uncomfortable questions. They will just stick to the script. There's a video that I watched that completely silenced me attached to this, where she explains what Easter eggs are. She tells everyone where to find them. And you know what? This is all her fault. The first thing she says is, I like to leave Easter eggs on my nails.
She said a lot of things in this era that have come back to haunt her time and time again. She's saying, I'm going to be political Barbie and I'm going to leave Easter eggs doing everything. So it's hard for me. I do feel bad that everything that she does
she gets
has to be.
Everything.
Yeah. But it's like, well,
but she did it to herself.
Moving like this. She needs to stop doing it for like a good period of time and maybe they'll leave her alone. But even then, I don't know.
She can't stop now. She can't. And it must be so annoying that she can't just randomly wear stuff without like people just thinking that it's going to be something. But again, when you're telling everyone to look at your fingernails as clues for your career, then I don't know what you expect. And she informs us in this video, and this silenced me because I totally forgot, in the Spotify video that she did for Delicate, those videos that play behind the songs when you listen to the songs, she's cavorting around in her coat. We all know that video. There's one take where she reaches out to the camera and her nails are painted in pastel colors. And she said that those were the colors she wanted for the next record. Why are we thinking of the colors before we thought of the concept?
See, this is where Lover went all wrong. And we've talked about this before. She was trying to do something specific. And everybody knows that when you try to force something to be, then that's when you're going to lose the plot. And everything about Lover was, I have to make a hit. This is my number one hit. And then this is my track five. And this is going to be the radio hit. And like this, that, and the other thing. And well, girls. Any comments?
Girls.
Concerns? Questions? I think you see what's going
cooler
on here.
Cooler in theory, but not.
But not if we force it to be. You should have just watched the Wild Horses. You should have just watched them.
I mean, and here's the thing. It's like she came up with the marketing campaign first. It was like, I want to do an image rebrand. How can I make music that facilitates that? That doesn't feel very sincere. Even though there are good songs.
No.
That's why Lover feels hollow. Because it was marketing first. It wasn't even concept first. It was like marketing agenda first. It was like, make me palatable again to the public and make younger people interested in me because I want to have young fans because they spend money. So there you go.
Ain't no INT.
She says that mentioning Brandon Urie in her Elle interview earlier this year was an Easter egg and that in her Reputation store calendar, she put a wax seal with a 13 stamp on April 13th because she wanted to do a 13-day countdown starting on April 13th. But I'm pretty sure it started on April 12th. So you flopped.
Well, and here's the other thing. I remember people doing math about the calendar thing and me being like, why? What are you guys doing? But now I know. She's doing it the whole time.
Itself is kind of just a nothing burger. She talks about feeling dehumanized and how tour and meeting fans helps her feel like there's more humanity in her life. And now here's where she starts contradicting herself. She says that she goes into writing sessions without any intentions. It's always pure. Why did we go into the me session saying verbatim on camera on the Jumbotron, I will be writing my first lead single today before a word had been written?
Again, this is the whole problem.
Is that pure?
Girl, there ain't no I in T.
I'm sure many times she sat down and been like, I want to write a banger and a banger has come out and it has been great. But this is something else. Saying I want to write a lead single is different to saying I want to write a banger. There's a lot more preconceived notions, a lot more pressure on the song when you write it as a lead single. And she tells us that this album is a lot of a lot and a wide spectrum of emotions and that you'll get some joyful songs, some bops and some really, really, really sad songs, but not enough where you need to worry about me. I was worrying.
Oh, I was so scared. But not for the reasons she thought. I was not scared by The Archer. I was not scared by many other sad songs. I was scared by me. I was scared by You Need to Calm Down.
Exactly. I was terrified.
Oh, I was scared. I was scared.
That was a deep sadness in you that you don't know that you were unveiling to the world. And we saw it. She's losing me again. In this interview, she says, I feel more comfortable being brave and vulnerable here. Once people delve into the album, it'll become clear that this is much more of a singer-songwriter personal journey than the last one. In what realm?
She's really losing me on this.
Reputation is far more personal than Lover to me.
Yeah, Lover has, I mean, I'm not saying that there's no moments of like real like writing on Lover. Like, of course, I'm not saying that.
It's not a singer-songwriter record.
And there's also multiple songs that feel very far removed from her.
Mm-hmm.
Me is very far removed. You Need to Calm Down is very far removed.
Miss Americana. Also
Miss Americana,
very far removed.
Yeah, very far removed.
I
even Death by a Thousand Cuts. because Death by a Thousand Cuts has like shrouded layers to it, it feels like that's not personal. So what are we talking about?
The personal journey was la la la, I love my man. That's she should have just stuck at it's fun. It's bright.
That's her right. Right. That's her right. I think he knows. Paper Rings, et cetera, et cetera. Like, if you just want to make that album, make that album. But let's not pretend like, we're not going to L and saying that songwriting is about finding the real emotions deep down. And then you turn around and go, me, he, hoo, hoo, hoo.
It can't be. It can't be. Everything's negated by that.
Yeah.
Then Taylor goes on Ellen. And this is her last Ellen DeGeneres appearance. Thank God we were spared. And she was a noted no-show to the Goodbye Ellen montages, which I thought was interesting. Her segment begins with a compilation of all the times Ellen has pried into her dating life. Perfect.
Wonderful.
Her hair is blue and she's wearing a pastel blue dress. This is not her worst. She's got blue nails. She says that she's having a lot of fun doing interviews again. And she talks about how everybody thought that when she was announcing me, the other conspiracy theory was that it was going to be something to do with Avengers Endgame. And when me came out, everybody started clowning on it and saying it was terrible. So a Swiftie wrote a tweet that said, since y'all want to be assholes for Taylor, Iron Man dies in Endgame. One of our most iconic pieces of Swiftie history.
Since y'all want to, and it's evergreen. Since y'all want to be assholes for Taylor, do you know how often people want to be assholes for Taylor?
All the time.
It's too often. All the time.
And
Iron
not always
Man
do we have
in Endgame.
A spoiler that will really ruin people's lives like that.
Oh, if this had come out in the Harry Potter days when the book was coming out and you did a Snape
goodbye.
Kills Dumbledore. Oh, goodbye.
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 Bigger than the whole sky. Yep. She says that she shaves her legs every day, which I think is kind of strange.
It's demented.
That's a lot of work. It's a lot of effort.
It is. Well, I hate
laser hair removal? Question mark.
Well, yeah. Why isn't? I would think that she does do laser hair removal. I mean, by this point, if you're showing your legs all the time and you have to have them be totally perfect, but the tea is, you can go 48 hours and people can't tell.
Not in Taylor Swift's house. Maybe she was just saying that. I think she was just saying that. Ellen makes her say, je suis calme. It's a really boring interview. She's just talking about her cats and nothing about the new album. She hints at a video coming out soon and says that it's not finished. And I didn't realize this. Ellen says, you should put me in it, like as a joke to Taylor, because Ellen's always saying stuff like that. And Taylor was like, do you want to be in it? I just realized that was an Easter egg, because Ellen was, in fact,
in
the You Need to Calm Down video that she was not finished working on yet. So...
Ellen was Troy Sivan instead of Troy Sivan being there. Like, Ellen was the replacement for Troy Sivan.
She was the Walmart version of Troy Sivan.
Yep.
Then they play Burning Questions. She's asked the title of her next single and declines to answer. But of course, her favorite shows are Killing Eve, Queer Eye, and Downton Abbey. She says the most rebellious thing she did as a teenager was put Joe on blast on Ellen's show. She says it was too much. Girl.
No, it wasn't. Do more.
No, it wasn't. Do more. More of that, please.
I love that. It would be so funny. I would love to make her watch her old stuff and watch her squirm, having to see herself
reactions.
Be so embarrassing on public television.
I want
to
see it.
I mean,
and
I clapped
what?
And I cheered, but
still
I
clapping.
I understand why she's embarrassed by that. I totally get it. If that was me, I'd be humiliated, but I love it.
She describes herself in three words as curious, cat lover, and romantic. Now, you have three words to describe yourself, and cat lover is one of them.
This is what I when you say she was forcing it, she really, really wanted that to be the thing.
Her thing.
And it's like, it already was.
I think
was
she thought it was
thing.
Endearing, or that softened her image.
We had moved past that being cute. It
no,
was cute
it was,
in 1989.
It was
and then in
now.
Reputation, it started really starting to be kind of huh.
Weird.
And then in Lover, it was transcended into full blown, we're cringing.
And that is not a place that we ever want to be in. Can we just reiterate? Yeah. We don't want to cringe at Taylor. We don't want to laugh at Taylor. We want to clap and cheer. And sometimes she makes it hard. At the end of the month, Taylor adds, and this was major, Never Really Over, Katy Perry's new song to her Apple Music playlist, and Katy likes a picture of Taylor on Instagram with her new cat, Benjamin Button. Now, this shook the world. This changed the world. I was seated. And the Never Really Over video, actually, upon reflection, is kind of like that elevated version of Lover we've been talking about. Like, the creative direction was really nice. Like, the visuals were really, old, but had, a new vibe to them. The color palette was good. I liked it.
Yeah, Never Really Over was a good moment. I like Never Really Over. That's
her last, some might say.
and last, you're last.
And you're last. You break up with Taylor, your career goes down the toilet. You get back together with Taylor, your career goes down the toilet. June, before that, on June 1st, before You Need to Calm Down, we get the inaugural Pride Day post from Taylor, aka the Pride Day post from Taylor.
Always posting.
She posts an open letter to a Tennessee senator about the Equality Act. And what's kind of twisted in hindsight is that Taylor truly did make the first 2 weeks of Pride Month literally all about her in order to release her brand new single, You Need to Calm Down, flop gay anthem that's like 20% about gay people and 80% about being a queen amongst other queens in the pop music industry. Oh, she kills me. She kills me.
Yeah. No, and the choice of Montana is only reinforcing that.
It's only making it worse. Yep. She writes the letter. The letter is good. Fine. We like the letter. Call out the homophobes. Do it. And then she dons perhaps the ugliest garment ever worn by anyone in the history of time, workshopped by a bunch of children who threw up on it, hand sewed with their eyes closed, to perform her worst set of all time. I'm ready to say it. Wango Tango, 2019.
And this is how she's paying tribute to the gays that she claims to love? This is how you're paying tribute to the gays? Not on my watch. Not on my watch.
You know what gays like to do? Gays like to clap and cheer. Gays like to gag. Gays like to say yas. And there was nothing yas about any of this. It was de-yasified. She de-yasified herself. This outfit begins with a horrific fringe jacket and ends with a yellow t-shirt tucked into a rainbow corset that turns into shorts with yellow rainbow sneakers. She overheats about 4 seconds into Shake It Off, removes the jacket, and drowns in sweat for the rest of the performance. She's fighting for her life. It's shocking. And words can't describe how bad this performance was.
The terrible pink lip, the hair that had been fried. It looks so thin and sick.
Stuck to her forehead.
Yeah. And the bowl cut.
And her voice.
And the vocals. I mean, there's nothing good to say. There's not a single positive thing to say.
We all know that Taylor's live vocals can vary in quality, but the lows that she sunk to during this performance, she was struggling to hit notes that she has hit on a regular basis before. The style, high notes, I've never heard anything like this. If someone loved her behind the console, they would have turned up the track and let her rock unknowingly with the mic off.
If they loved her, if they cared about her. And then she brought out Brandon Urie, and I've never seen something more horrible.
It's really
from start to finish.
So bad. It's so bad. And can I also remind everyone that we're 6 weeks into the official album campaign and unofficially 5 months into it from when she started Easter egging it. And we have one flop song. The set list is Shake It Off, Blank Space, Trouble, Love Story, Delicate, Out of Key on the guitar, Style, We Are Never, Shockingly Bad, by the way. And to top it all off, the worst performance of me. I think this performance started the coronavirus.
Well, it makes sense. The timeline adds up. I mean, how do you explain that? How do you explain that?
I was watching this in my office, like, shocked. I didn't know what to say. I was like, this is unbelievable.
I don't think I saw most of it. And I've told you that before.
I forced you to watch some of it.
Right, but not at the time. Not at the time. It took me years. I only just recently watched it this past summer because I had to for the thing. And now... Well, I could have lived my life without seeing that. I could have lived my life without seeing that. I mean, one less person to see the embarrassment would have been nice. But
yeah, would have protected her a little bit. But we're only getting worse. It only gets worse from here. So on the 13th of June, she goes on her Instagram live. She looks very pretty here. She looks gorgeous here. This is also a noted scene in the Miss Americana doc. She's perched beside a window in her apartment in New York, and she makes a few catastrophic announcements. First of all, Lover is the name of the record. We knew that. It's coming out on August 23rd. It has 18 tracks and it's romantic. This is long for a Taylor Swift album. I mean, Red was what, 16 tracks on its standard edition?
Yeah.
So this is long. This is her longest album yet. And then she announces her hideous collaboration with Stella McCartney and The Lover Diaries. And she also announces that You Need to Calm Down is going to come out the following day. Now, what did we think of the Lover album cover, Madeline?
I liked it.
I thought it was okay. I had no strong reaction to it.
I really liked the live stream. I remember being like really, really happy about it. I remember everything that she said I thought sounded really good. I thought the romantic album sounded good. I thought that it was going to be like Speak Now.
Good.
Right? Yeah. Everything. I was really happy with it. I was like, okay, this was like a big like, whew, moment for me. I didn't know what was to come.
I was about to say right before.
Yeah.
Right before.
But I was really, I mean... of course, she never picks the perfect picture for the cover, but I like the idea of the cover. I do. I like the background.
There are better pictures from the shoot, as always, but it's not the worst picture. I like the lover heart is cute. We should have been doing more of that, like live.
Yeah, what happened to that? Well, maybe we could have if Loverfest had ever come to fruition. I mean, the thing about Loverfest is that we walked away from thousands of people with hearts over their eyes. We walked away from it.
We said away. A sea of pink. No. Well, you know what? Eras Tour is kind of like that. Everybody dresses up in Lover. Like, it's the most popular era to do,
which
for sure.
Which is interesting. I think it's because it's so
it's easy.
Tempting.
I think you can also just make it out of your closet. Yeah. Like, you go in there, pastel, pink, get a couple friendship bracelets, you're good.
Yeah.
And Sheen is also happy to fill in the gaps in your closet.
Well, Sheen loves
to
do that.
So, June 14th, she posts a picture of a fence from the You Need to Calm Down music video and says there were 5 posts in the fence. Is this a joke to you?
It was a joke to her. And see, that's why you can never do anything again. Acknowledging the crazy only makes the crazy worse. You should have ate your food. Never mention 5 holes in the fence. Tiffany.
Be quiet. When will she learn that getting involved doesn't make it funny? She won't. She won't learn.
She won't.
Then the single cover comes out. And I remember this leaked on ATRL and I saw it and I was like, this is fucking fake. I was like, this is the ugliest thing I've ever seen. It is objectively a hideous cover. Taylor Swift in a bikini with a monstrous tattoo of snakes and butterflies on her back, facing away from the camera in front of a trailer. Surely not.
That's not my president. That's not my president.
I don't know that. The font of You Need to Calm Down. I didn't know that.
I
never heard of that. I never heard of it.
The hair. I didn't see that.
Raggedy bun. That wasn't any of my business.
That's not my business. I don't know anything about that.
But unfortunately, You Need to Calm Down comes out, and it is a co-write with Joel Little, who is the architect of disaster of this record. And he has Taylor has a production credit on it too. Girl, we don't want that. You don't want that. Say no next time.
Boom, 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 boom.
Can we talk about how at this point we are 49 days into the album campaign and this is our fucking lot? Meanwhile, she's sitting on her ass on Cruel Summer, Death by a Thousand Cuts, Miss Americana, False God, literally anything else. I would have taken The Man at this point. Happily, I would have taken The Man. She should have just led with that. Oh, The Man should have just been the lead single of Lover.
I would have taken The Man. I would have been like, okay, so we're still doing this, huh? Okay.
Yep.
I'm into it, man.
And
no,
it's
I'm
fun.
Familiar. We're doing rap. Okay, let's do rap.
And, you know, The Man is one of those ones that is a little bit cringy, but has worn me down over time because it actually is a good song. That hasn't happened with You Need to Calm Down and Me because they are not good songs. That's the difference. It's also June. So she said, I'm going to do some opportunistic allyship. I'm rehabbing my image. So we need to do that with the gays with a flop, Todrick Hall inspired disaster of a music video instead of acting like the true huntress of gays by releasing Cruel Summer with a gorgeous music video. Allergic to serving.
Allergic to serving. And that's all there is to it. Employing Todrick Hall.
Silent. Noted director of his own music videos, and I would suggest that you go and view them and pretend that you are looking at them as a resume to go and have him make your big song, your big video. So anyway, this song, this is how she described it. The first verse is about trolls and cancel culture. The second verse is about homophobes and the people picketing outside our concerts. I never saw that at a Taylor Swift concert.
Oh, you didn't see that?
I'm sure they did it.
To be fair, that was a thing on the Reputation tour. There was a big thing on the Reputation tour. Yeah.
Well, yes. The third verse is about successful women being pitted against each other. And it's like, well, thanks, Captain Obvious. The lyrics really make that clear. We did an explanation. Before we talk into the mess, let's talk about the good that came from this. So she got a bunch of signatures for the Equality Act and GLAAD reported an unspecified influx of donations in the number of $13. Okay, fine. We clap and cheer. But what is the profit from the song ratio to the amount donated? And did Taylor Swift make a donation?
We don't have that
information. We don't know. We don't know. I wouldn't care to know, nor would anyone, if this wasn't billed as the first brick at Stonewall. She thought that she ended homophobia by making it all about
she did.
Me.
Yep. She said, I alone can do this. Only she me.
Said, I know how to fix gay rights. You just and what tell I'm gonna everyone do is, you need to calm down.
You bring all the gay people you know into the trailer park, and that's how you fix it. Yep.
The trailer park. That is another perplexing, the trailer park. Perplexing addition to this video.
I don't know what they were thinking when they did that. Like, oh, all the gay people, all the queer people you know live in the trailer
park?
Mobile
homes.
What is the... What's the message? I don't get that. But that's neither here nor there. There isn't one. It's probably like something they barely thought through. They just didn't think
about it. They just thought it looked good.
Yeah.
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 And truly, when you think about it, the way she's constructed this song, it literally is like, hey, I know how it feels to experience homophobic bullying. I got called a snake and I get compared to Beyonce when I do my flop drumline for me. It's like, okay, yes, there is a separate conversation to have there. What you're speaking on is misogyny. And what you're doing is conflating the two and making it all about you during Pride Month. The critical response, it was a little bit better than me. I think people were just glad to hear something that was not me. And You Need to Calm Down sonically is an improvement. It's not a big one, but it is better. The backlash to this is pretty, forgive the pun, swift in the industry and out of it. It is very hard to view this entire endeavor as anything other than opportunistic performative allyship. And we've memed it now, and it's fun, and it's fun on the Eras Tour, but like fundamentally, this was embarrassing. So I guess we can read some of the comments from publications. The LA Times said, the explicit pro-gay message is certainly welcome, but feels the slightest bit cynical.
Pitchfork, while the song is well-intentioned, it is bewildering and underwhelming. Well, yes.
When they come for the clock, sometimes they really, they clock.
Yeah.
Esquire, Swift misses the point of being an ally by equating online haters with the personal and societal struggles of LGBTQ people. Well, yes.
Well, exactly, Esquire. Thank you so much for saying it. Spin. The easy, inoffensive lyrics feel engineered to appeal to the broadest possible demographic. So safe that it feels like a cop-out. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Not my Taylor Swift. Another critic compared it to Mean unfavorably, and I was like, oh, it literally is Yassified Mean. Like, that's what You Need to Calm Down is. And the chart performance was another humbling moment for the head snake in charge. The second single is kind of the last time you have, in my opinion, to have the opportunity to capitalize on the hype of a new album cycle and get the momentum to go number one. Anything after that, the song has to be like a true organic hit, which happened years later with Cruel Summer, but that wasn't on the cards for us, and it didn't happen with The Man or Lover. I always wonder what difference quality would have made here. She's continuously blocked by Old Town Road. Both me and You Need to Calm Down had by sheer force gotten to number two. But I think people also generally were not vibing with these songs the way they had with Taylor's songs in the past. The Uber driver loved it, but the people were growing weary.
I just don't think that either of these two songs landed. I don't think they landed with any of the audiences that she wanted them to. They didn't land generally. Me did not really land with kids, and I don't think You Need to Calm Down generally landed with gay audiences. So
no, I think everybody met with? You Need to Calm Down with this is a little bit embarrassing. And also, not only embarrassing, there's something cynical about it, which is really not a good way to be perceived.
Right. Exactly.
And it was executive produced, the video, as we mentioned, by Todrick Hall, the literal most, and I hate to say this, stereotypical gay in the history of the world. And the fact that this man, who has a song called Nails, Hair, Hips, Heels, was Taylor's sole gay consultant on this entire endeavor betrays her cluelessness. The fact that this was presented as part of her grand political awakening, her sudden rise to consciousness, it's deeply embarrassing. And the depiction of being gay in this video is very superficial. Gay is wearing crop tops and hanging out with your gay besties and saying slay queen while being an accessory to beautiful women. These are reductive tropes. And again, only a straight person could make a video like this.
It's probably like, in spite of it all, even the bi wig, doesn't matter. In spite of the bi wig, it has to be said that, like, I don't really think a lesbian would make this video. I genuinely don't
think so. A member of the gay community, even tangentially, would not be coming up with this. Also not forget to mention that the video itself is hideous. Like, it's just horrible through and through, from the back tattoo to the bi pride flag wig. It's gross.
And all of the outfits are bad. Like, the bi wig outfit is bad. Oh, like, what is that?
That is so ugly. The gold shorts and the tied blue
denim. Who was the stylist behind the scenes? Was that Todrick too?
A blind person. Probably, actually. He wears stuff like that all the time.
Wait, did we talk about Ryan Reynolds painting Stonewall? Now that he can't talk about, you need to calm down without mentioning, for everybody in the video is a queer icon of some degree. Every single one, except Ryan Reynolds, who's painting Stonewall.
Inexplicably. I would have taken Blake Lively.
Why is he there? Just to be like, just so he could glom on to be like, I also support gays, by the way.
But I'm not gay. Don't ever mistake that.
But by the way, I'm not gay.
It was completely unnecessary. And I also think it's hilarious how whenever Taylor wants to make a point of, about solidarity or like a thing in the world, I'm thinking of the Girl Squad here in 1989, she literally just assembles a group of people to do it with her. And she's like, by virtue of standing next to these people, I am with them and I am part of their struggle. She, to me, the casting of this video was, I wrote a list in my notes of every gay person I could think of and I emailed them all at the same time.
And these are the ones that said yes. That's not even everybody she emailed, as we know. Sad. Again, because Troye Sivan. Troye Sivan pin. Troye Sivan said, I'm not doing that.
I'm not free that day. I'm not free any other day to do this project. Mm-mm. And then, of course, we have the one... Actually, there are kind of two good parts about this. The part that served was all the queens together dressing up.
Oh, I love that. I do love that. That's one of my favorite moments, yeah.
Really good. And then, of course, hell freezes over. The great cessation of Katy Perry and Taylor Swift. Now, I have to say, this is the best part of the music video. What does it have to do with gay rights? Nothing. Absolutely nothing at all. But it's the All About Me music video. So if we're doing All About Me, I like to see it.
We might as well make up with Katy Perry in my gay rights video. Why not? Why not?
What else am I doing? What else am I doing? Taylor also had to immediately jump on Tumblr and dispel. There was this big rumor going around that, because this is really the Lover era, unfortunately, is where the Gaylor stuff really starts to take legs. This is their villain origin story. They will have alternative facts for everything that we've stated to you here. But there was this rumor being spread that Katie and Taylor had kissed, and it was originally going to be in the cut of the video. And then once the backlash to the song, You Need to Calm Down, came out, they edited it out. And Taylor said... Taylor said that, guys, this is absolutely false. To be an ally is to understand the difference between advocating and baiting. Anyone trying to twist this positivity into something it isn't needs to calm down. It costs $0 to not step on our gowns. Girl.
I forgot about that too. That's so funny.
Girl.
She was like,
the way it was phrased.
It cost $0 to not step on our
She can be such a Karen. She can be such a Karen when she wants to be a Karen.
When you know when she says, let me be clear. And she says, says that whenever she's posting, let me be clear. It's like, okay.
That's her Karen.
I can literally see you at the McDonald's counter arguing over a pie. Like, I can see it right now.
Maybe she snapped. Maybe she snapped. So Katie posts a picture of a tray of cookies with peace at last written on them on her Instagram. She is a lot more gracious about this occasion than I would have been, perhaps. But I suppose when you have the Te Voodoo on your back, you will do anything to shake it off. She explains that reconciling with Taylor was kind of a process. Well, I'll say. She says that she made the first step by sending her an olive branch on the Reputation tour. She also said there's maybe only 5 other people in the world that can have the same type of conversations and understand where we're coming from, and we should celebrate our commonality and our friendship and be able to be there for each other. And that's interesting, an interesting thread to probe now that we have girls so confusing in our lives. It's like, do you have to be able to be friends just because you understand each other?
Well, Lord and Charlie said yes. Let's work it out on the remix. That's the thing. That's the thing about the Girl So Confusing remix is that they literally said yes. But sympathy is a knife.
Well, there you go. See, there's two.
There's layers to it. There's always
layers.
There's
two layers. It's not all We Got Crowns.
Girl So Confusing, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-mm.
Sometimes we don't all have crowns, and that's okay. So after this, time passed, and Katie approached Taylor at an award show. I'm shocked that Taylor allowed Katie to approach her, get anywhere near her, and said, I think we've grown up. I love you. I'm here for you. I'm sorry, and I hope we can be friends again in the future. Then she said that Taylor started texting her and trusting her again. Interesting wording. I'm like, so you agree you did something wrong that would make Taylor not want to trust you. Okay.
Well, she did.
She literally did. So you agree. So it is about the dancers.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know. We don't know that.
It was about John Mayer. This is what I'm talking about.
Well,
what are you talking about?
But of course.
Well, yes.
But of course.
But of course.
So then Taylor invites her over and they eat cookies. There is more on this in Taylor's Rolling Stone interview that will come in 2019 part 2. And then we end this period of time, with Taylor attending the Stonewall Inn during Pride Month to perform Shake It Off with her pink guitar. We get some good candids of her in daisy heels, metallic high-waisted shorts, a pink polka dot blouse, and a pink blazer. I thought that was cute.
It was cute. It was a cute moment. She's a cute girl.
She was really into Office Girl. She was into Briefcase. She was into Suit.
When I read that comment in the notes, I thought it was so funny because I actually had never put two and two together, but she was doing like girl boss, but make it Claire's. Like I hadn't realized that, but that's literally what she was doing.
Girls can go to the office too in pink.
Congratulations. She was doing Elwood's Harvard Law School kind of a moment. And you know what? That's always fun. And everybody always likes to see it. I mean, I know I do. I love it when the blazer comes on at the Eras Tour. I love it when the blazer comes on.
Oh,
so sure.
Especially when Elwood's, it's the pink one. Especially Elwood's, when it's the pink one.
Take it away.
Speaking of take it away, that is where we conclude 2019 part one. I'm so glad that's over.
Oh, me too. Let me tell you something. It's not my favorite topic to revisit. There's so much more positivity in the second half. The worst part of Lover is the rollout. That is the absolute worst part of it.
We get to get into her Tiny Desk performance and her SNL performances and like a couple more interviews, the album itself. 2019 Part 2 will be a lot more positive than this. This obviously leans negative because what was the material? You honestly review the material here and tell me what I should be positive about.
I want to know. I want
to
know.
There's nothing to smile about.
Who's making an episode about this and going, we loved every single second of it, except for the 11-year-old.
The 11-year-old
Swiftie. And that's their right, by the way. I mean, come on.
That's who this album was made for. But unfortunately, that's not who she was trying to target.
Right. And that's
Well, you know, if you want more information, if you want more Evolution of a Snake content, you got to go to the Patreon. Patreon.com/Riddologist, where you can get us weekly. Also, if you have the video accompaniment of this or you're watching this on YouTube, Madeline is wearing her Lizard Review cap, which you can go and purchase from our online store.
You
conveniently lover themed.
Guerrilla marketing. Well, that's why I wore it. I was like, listen, it works on both ways. It works
pastels
on both levels. Exactly.
It works. And we are grateful that you were here, and we will see you in the next yearly episode.